listener-supported non-commercial radio coming your way from the campus of Henry Ford College. You're listening to WHFR Dearborn. Tuesday, can you believe it? Another Tuesday, another Radio Vault is in the works on your radio, and we have managed to assemble another 3 hours of anything classic will do. We're going to kick it off in just a moment with, I'll tell you what we got. We've got one Jack Benny, two Fibber McGee and Molly's, one are Miss Brooks, and one Lux Radio Theater. We usually make the middle hour of today's program, of most programs, as full hour presentations. And we have got Margie for hour number two of the Lux Radio Theater. Hour number one, we're going to kick it off with a Jack Benny show. And this is, as we like to say, a version that that was distributed by the Armed Forces Radio Service, AFRS, if you will. And if you're listening, if you listen to this program for any length of time, you know that the only thing different between Armed Forces Radio Service shows and the domestic version is there's no commercials, so perfect for us, right? Here at WHFR. So we're going to hear an episode called The Infantry from 1944. Our two Fibber McGee and Molly shows are from early in the series, one from 1937, working out in the gym, and another one from 1938, managing a writing academy. That'll be later on. Later on, we'll also have an episode of Our Miss Brooks from July 31st, almost around this time, just a little bit before this time, where Connie was thinking about resigning. Our Miss Brooks is the story of an English teacher at Madison High School. And featuring a plethora of people who went on to, I'm not going to say bigger and better, but bigger and different things. Our Miss Brooks made a successful run on television as well. So if you're ready, I think I'm just about ready. Let's kick it off with our one and only Jack Benny show for today. From May 14, 1944. Let's listen. This is Radio Vault, 3 hours of classic entertainment that maybe our grandparents or our great-grandparents listened to before television. Let's listen.
For all you men and women in the Armed Forces of the United Nations, a rebroadcast of The Jack Benny Show with Mary Livingston, Phil Harris, Rochester, Jack Benny's special guest singer, and Don Wilson.
Ladies and gentlemen, as you all know, radio is one of the world's greatest mediums of entertainment. All week long, you are entertained by your radio. On Monday, you hear...
The Cavalcade of America.
On Tuesday...
It's Bob Hope.
Wednesday...
Eddie Cantor.
On Thursday...
You hear Bing Crosby.
Friday...
Amos and Andy.
On Saturday...
It's Truth or Consequences.
And on Sunday, you wait for none other than... Jack Benny.
Who?
On Sunday, you listen to Jack Benny.
Look, fat boy, this is a free country. When Sunday comes around, you listen to what you like, and I'll listen to what I like.
Oh, yeah? Well, have you had enough?
Yeah. Ladies and gentlemen, if you don't want your teeth kicked in, you better listen to Jack Benny.
Thank you. Hello again, this is Jack Benny talking. And fellas, it certainly is great being here at Camp-a-Dance. Yes, sir, it's really...
Hey, Mr. Benny, can I go now?
Certainly you can go. We don't force anybody to listen to this program. If you want to hear it, we're happy. If you don't want to hear it, it's up to you. Don, untie him. Go ahead.
Okay.
There you are. You can go now.
Take the anchor off my foot, too.
Oh, get out of here.
Who was that guy, Jack?
I don't know. He told me he was a talking horse, so I thought it'd be a novelty on the program. Anyway, Don, now that he's gone, these boys have waited long enough to be entertained. So let's start out with that joke I wrote.
Oh, you mean the one about the soldier on leave?
Yeah, this'll kill him. I mean, it's made to order for these guys, you know? Oh, really, they love it. Okay, here goes. Say, Don, what's the difference between a soldier on leave and a flea on a cat's stomach?
I don't know, Jack. What is the difference between a soldier on leave and a flea on a cat's stomach?
One's on furlough and the other's on low fur. Oh, Benny, if you were any sharper, you'd cut yourself. Great gag, isn't it, Don?
Yeah, it certainly is, Jack.
Yeah, it's a shame to tell that clever stuff so early in the program. But we might as well start off with a bang. It helps the... Oh, hello, Mary.
Hello, Jack. Hiya, fellas. Say, Jack.
What?
As I walked in, I saw a fella come out of here, and he looked like he lost an argument with a Sherman tank.
Oh, that was some wise guy, a Mr. Fitch or somebody. He interrupted the start of the program. So Don beat him up.
Don beat him up?
Yeah. I thought I'd never get to tell that gag about the furlough and the low fur.
Jack, did you tell that joke here?
Yes, why?
Don beat up the wrong guy.
What are you talking about? When I pulled that gag, these boys screamed at it.
I know, Jack, but when they pull a hair out at the same time, that's not good.
Well, maybe you're right. Anyway, if you want to know something, I was tricked into telling that furlough joke. I didn't even write it.
Then where'd you get it?
I have a lend-lease agreement with Fred Allen. Imagine him sending me a lousy gag like that after the gem I sent him.
Gem?
Yeah, listen to this, Don. Here's the one I sent Allen. Allen says to Jimmy Wallington...
Say, Jimmy... Why does a corporal have such a tough time in the Army?
And Jimmy says, I don't know, Fred. Then Alan says,
a corporal has such a tough time in the Army, because he already has two stripes against him.
Listen to the audience razzing Alan. It serves him right.
Jack, let me get this straight. You told Alan's joke here on the West Coast, and Alan is going to tell your joke on the East Coast?
Yeah, what about it?
I'd hate to be in Kansas City, trapped in the middle.
Mary, if you don't appreciate good comedy, then there's no use of... Come in.
Hello, Mr. Benny. Here I am again.
Look, we untied you, so you... Say, what are you doing in that uniform?
I just enlisted in the Army.
You did?
Yeah, if you're a civilian, I want to be on the other side.
I bet he won't last in the Army 2 hours.
Well, I hope he isn't the guy that's going to drive us back in that Jeep tonight.
Now, are we going back in one of those things?
Yeah, why?
Well, that's the way they brought me here. I was sitting in the back seat, and every time we hit a bump, oh, brother.
What do you mean? What do you mean, oh, brother?
Don, for years, the slogan was, the Army travels on its stomach. And then somebody invented the G. Well, if we're going back in the Jeep, I better have Rochester bring my overcoat. I'll call my hotel. He must be in my room packing, doesn't he?
Hello, Hotel Benson.
Operator, this is Jack Benny. Give me my room.
Very well. Shall I wrap it up or will you eat in here?
What?
Oh, I'm sorry. I used to be a waitress at the Brass Duck.
Oh, well, get me my room. It's 425.
Yes, sir. I liked working at the Brass Duck, but I got fired for dancing with a customer.
That's too bad. Now, will you please get me my room?
We were jitterbugging, and boy, can he jitterbug.
Miss, all I want is my room. Now, will you please get it for me? It's 420.
Bad enough I got fired, but the boss accused me of stealing.
Look, miss.
Was it my fault if my foot got stuck in a cuspidor?
Anything about your job at the Brass Duck. All I want
Hey,
is...
Hey, you sound like the guy I dance with. What did you do with my lipstick?
Now, hold on a minute. You've got the wrong party.
Oh, well, then I'm sorry I bothered you. Goodbye.
Miss, hello. How do you like that? She hung up. Oh, well, I'll call later. Was Dark Eyes played by the orchestra. And now, fellas...
Hey, wait a minute, Jackson. Don't give me no brush off. Tell them who's orchestra.
What?
Well, let me have a little billing. Tell these soldier here's whose band that is.
Phil, I don't have to tell them. When they see 18 men wearing overalls, no shoes, and fatigued faces, they know whose band it is, believe me.
Well, I don't care about the band. I'm talking about me. You didn't give me no introduction.
Introduction?
Yeah, me. Phil Harris, the kid with $1 million personality.
Huh?
And 175 pounds of glamour.
Well, I'm sorry I didn't introduce you, Phil.
No wonder I got an inferiority complex.
Inferiority complex? You're about as shy as a hand grenade. And not only that...
Jack, why don't you leave Phil alone? It isn't his fault that he's better looking than you are.
Who said he was better looking than I am?
I did.
You did? Phil, do you mean to say that you go around telling people you're better looking than me?
No, I don't make no personal issue out of it. I just say I'm better looking than anybody.
Well, now I've heard everything. You know, Phil, you amaze me. You're the only fella I ever met that always talks about himself. Just once in a while, Phil. Once in a while, it's nice to talk about the other fellow. Get the idea?
Yeah, I think I do, Jackson, and I think you're right. Come on, let's try it. Now, I meet you on the street and you greet me.
Okay. Good morning, Phil.
Good morning, Jackson. Did you have a good breakfast this morning?
Yes, Phil, I had a wonderful breakfast this morning.
Well, I'm still better looking than you are.
There's no use explaining anything to you.
Say, Jack.
What?
Forget about Phil. If we're going back in that Jeep, you better try and get Rochester again.
Oh, yes. I want him to bring my overcoat. Mary, you get the number. I don't want to get in another fight with that telephone operator.
Okay.
Drives me nuts anyway. Silly Dane.
Hotel Benton, will you get me room 425, please? Yes, ma'am, and you can tell Mr. Benny he's a coward. Here, Jack. She's ringing your room.
Okay, I'll take it.
Hello? Sister Benny. Star of stage, screen, radio, and television, whether it's listening or looking, he's open for booking.
Rochester, this is Mr. Benny.
Oh, hello, boss.
Now, Rochester, they're taking us back in a Jeep, and I don't want to catch cold. So will you bring my...
But, boss, I saw you put it on when you left this morning.
My coat?
Oh, I thought you wanted your hair.
I wanted my coat. It'll be cold.
Then you better take your hair, too. It's got earmuffs.
Only when I part it in the middle. Now bring my coat. Now bring my coat over here right away.
But, boss, I got a date. Besides, you promised me I could have this Sunday off.
Sunday off. Look at these soldiers here. They work every day in the week.
Yeah, but look at the dough they're getting.
They're not getting much more than you are. If you want our household run on a military basis, it's all right with me.
It's part military now.
Rochester, you're just making that up.
Not the military part. Remember when we were home and you locked me in the guardhouse for 10 days?
Yes. What are you laughing at?
If you didn't have to come in there every morning to wash up, I'd have never got out.
Never mind that and bring my overcoat here right away.
Okay, General. Goodbye.
Goodbye. Oh, that Rochester. Tell you, if he wasn't a private, I'd demote him. And now, in keeping with the spirit of the day, the boys have selected one soldier to represent them on our program. And he's going to sing a song for us. Here he is, ladies and gentlemen, Private First Class Luther Balliet of the 276th Infantry. What's the number going to be, Luther?
I'm going to sing It's a Lovely Way to Spend an Evening.
Not in Corvallis. It'll go right ahead, anyway. Go right ahead.
Yes, sir. Yeah, that was...
was "It's a Lovely Way to Spend an Evening," sung by Private First Class Luther Balliet. And very good, Luther. It was a great pleasure having you with us.
Thank you, Mr. Benny.
And I want to tell you something, Luther. You're in a great outfit and a great branch of the service. The good old infantry. If I was a year or two younger, the infantry is the branch of the service I'd like to be in.
Yes, sir.
Oh, yeah? Tell them what happened when they let you go marching yesterday. Well...
Go on, Jack. Tell Luther.
Oh, Mary, he's not interested.
Well, then I'll tell him.
Mary, will you please...
Listen, Luther, Jack wanted to show how rugged he was, so he asked the sergeant if he could march with the soldiers.
Mary, now will you please...
We all went along because we wanted to see how Jack could take it. We were out with for about a half an hour, and...
This is a life. Nothing like a good hike.
Yeah. We must have gone about 6 miles and I don't even feel tired. How about you, Jack?
Oh, I feel fine, except that my shoes are beginning to bother me.
Really?
Yeah. I wonder where I left them.
Why, Jack, I didn't even notice you weren't wearing shoes. When did you take them off?
When the sergeant fell and sent out an SOS.
I didn't take my shoes off. They just dropped behind. Here they come now. Halt! Here. Help me out with them, Rochester.
Okay.
Hey, you. Benny.
Yes, sir?
Why don't you keep up with the company? This is the third time we've had to come back for you.
Well, I'm sorry, but I got a little tired.
Well, it's your own fault. You shouldn't have tried to march with these young men.
Wait a minute. Are you insinuating that I'm old?
That's what he said. That's what the man said. He said that.
Rochester, stop helping him.
All right, let's get going. All right.
Heaven, it's about time. Come on, Mary, let's find a soft spot to sit down.
Okay.
Here's the place. Ah, oh boy, this feels good.
All right, everybody, up on your feet, man.
Chance to get my breath, will you?
I'll run ahead and stop them.
Oh, let them go. We can find our way back to camp.
Oh, Jack, let's not turn back. This is fun.
Fun?
Certainly, yeah. Jack. We ought to keep hiking a little more. Walking is good for the figure.
It is not good for the figure.
It is, too.
Oh, yeah? Well, there are 10 million soldiers in the American Army who go out on 20-mile hikes every week, and not one of them looks like Lana Turner. Now, let's get back, will you? Come on, follow me, will you, fellas?
We should have stuck with the soldiers, Jack. Now we're lost.
Yeah, I wonder where that trail is. We're either in the jungle or in the middle of Corvallis here. Let's try this direction. That ought to take us somewhere.
Roll him out, brother. You're faded.
Rochester. Rochester, get up. That's a rattlesnake. Rochester, I told you that's a rattlesnake.
So what? His mind's as good as anybody.
Stop acting so silly. It'll be dark soon, and we won't
Oh, look, Jack. There's a soldier over there in that clearing.
Oh, yeah. Hey, soldier! Soldier!
Yes, sir?
How do we get to Camp Adair?
Just take that trail to the left.
Thanks. Come on, gang. Hey, everybody, come over here and take a look at this sign.
Sign? What does it say?
I don't know, but I think it's in English.
Here it is. It says infiltration course. What does that mean?
Huh?
What does that mean, Jack?
I don't know. I guess it's army talk for shortcut. Let's go through it. Follow me, kids.
Hey, those are bullets.
Yeah, are we being shot at?
I don't know, boss. Let's lie down until we talk it over.
I wonder who... Down, everybody, down. Flat on your stomach. Wilson, lie down.
I am lying down.
You make less of a target that way. Hey, this must be the course where they train the soldiers with live ammunition. Rochester, stand up and see where they're firing from.
I ain't that curious.
Those soldiers don't know we're here. I'll stand up and let them see me.
They saw you. I better stand up and let them see me.
They see you. They see you, Mary. Hey, look, they're waving at us.
Benny Show is rebroadcast especially for you soldiers, sailors, marines, and coast guardsmen of the United Nations. Now we turn the remainder of the program over to the Benny Bandmaster, Phil Harris. Music, Phil.
And remember on these AFRS shows when they didn't have commercials or they didn't they weren't required to play commercials, what did they fill the time with? You're hearing it now.
Make a salute. Boot. Then you wash and dress. More or less. You go get your breakfast at a beautiful little cafe they call the Mess. Jack, when you convalesce, out of your seat, into the street, make with the feet, greet. Now, if you're a PFC, your duty is to salute a L-I-E-U-T. But if you brush the L-I-E-U-T, the MP makes you KP on the QT. This is the G.I. Jive, man alive. They give you a private tank that features a little device called Fluid Drive. Jack, after you revive, chunk all your junk back in your trunk. On your bunk, a clown. Man alive. They give you a private tank that features a little device called Fluid Drive. Jack, if you survive, chunk all your junk back in your trunk. Fall on your bunk, clunk. Soon you're counting jeeps, but before you count to five, be right back digging that G.I.
are listening to Radio Vault. The August 5th, 2025 edition. We are live in the studio. Featuring radio shows from before our time, let's put it that way. We just heard Jack Benny from May 14, 1944, the Infantry Show. Armed Forces Radio Service version, obviously. In just a matter of moments, we're going to make way for... They called it the Johnson Wax Program because it was sponsored by, obviously, Johnson Wax, but it was really Jim Jordan and Marion Jordan, better known as Fibber McGee and Molly. They had a very long run and seemed like they were always in competing with Jack Benny for the top spot. Jack usually won out. In the Hooper ratings, that was before Nielsen. If you know anything about ratings, if you don't, that's okay too. Well, we had one heck of a lot of fun seeing a lot of you out at the Dearborn Homecoming Festival. Got to meet Brian from the other side, who comes on after the show. Maybe you met Andy Park, Strictly Gospel Man. Perhaps if you came by on Friday, you got to meet our boss, Susan McGraw, and the man who started this radio show 40 years ago, can you believe that? 40 years ago, it was just an idea. An idea of the man by the name of Jay Koronek. He came by and with Susan hosted the Journal, which airs every Friday at 1 o'clock. Maybe you met Terrence Tyson, who does our Sunday morning jazz show. A lot of faces were down there, and we'll do it again in another year. And you can pick up vinyl and CDs for a buck a piece. But don't forget our record show is coming up, and what a great segue into this.
The 16th annual WHFR Record Show is Saturday, September 20th. If you're looking to sell records, cassettes, CDs, DVDs, VHS, or other music swag, WHFR is now accepting vendor applications. For dealer information, please visit our website, www.whfr.fm/recordshow. That's www.whfr.fm/recordshow. We look forward to working with you at the 16th annual WHFR Record Show, Saturday, September 20th.
Thank you, Rob. You got to meet Rob with two B's. As a matter of fact, if you came to the Dearborn Homecoming and visited the WHFR tent, a good time was had by all, and I'm sure there will be many more similar activities in the months and years ahead here at WHFR. If not, then, well, you sure got to listen to a lot of it on the radio, and we appreciate whatever part you played in the WHFR appearance at the Dearborn Homecoming.
The 16th annual WHFR Record Show is Saturday.
Hi, I'm David Twitchell, host of We Are Not Alone, which airs the first Monday of each month at 2 p.m. right here on WHFR. We interview scientists and ufologists from around the country and around the world about the UFO-UAP phenomenon. We Are Not Alone has been a staple on WHFR since 2007. And since the Pentagon, Navy, and Air Force have all admitted to the UAP reality, the show's content has become even more relevant. So join me, David Twitchell, the first Monday of each month at 2 p.m. on WHFR. We Are Not Alone.
That was on yesterday here at WHFR. Dave Twitchell and all his festivities on alternate weeks. Well, on most of the weeks, you get to hear classic music from the 50s and 60s, all right here on your, we hope, your favorite radio station. We need to go back now and go return to our classic programming. And let's do a coin toss and see what we come up with. I think we've come up with Fibber McGee and Molly. I'm just trying to manipulate this computer to do what I want it to do, and I think we got it solved. Let's listen.
Of Johnson's Wax present Fibber McGee and Company with Billy Mills Orchestra. The program opens with Having Myself a Time. Here is an advertisement from today's issue of the Wistful Vista Gazette. Wanted, partnership or management of profitable business. Undersigned will invest no money, but his genius for organization, splendid personality, shrewd judgment, and tremendous energy are offered in exchange for interest in right concern. Apply in person at 79 Wistful Vista to Fibber McGee.
Why I didn't think of this idea before, Sil. That's the way to get things these days, advertise.
Yes, sir, I know that, Miss McGee. I got an uncle to prove that.
Oh, your uncle, eh?
Yes.
Did he get a job by advertising?
No, sir, but it was advertising that got him after he'd done a job.
Mm. Hot dog, an answer already. Come in.
Are you the Fibber McGee who advertised in today's Gazette?
You betcha, bud. What you got to offer?
The bill for the ad. $6.25.
Now listen, bud. Hey, bud. I got an idea.
Never mind the great ideas. Pay me. $6.25.
Listen, bud. You have much trouble making collections?
You ought to know. Why?
What'll you give me to help you collect the tough accounts?
The usual percentage is 50% on deadbeats. You want a job?
I'm hired. And here's $3.13.
What's that for?
That's that McGee account. Boy, was he tough. Now, if you don't mind, I think I'll resign, bud. Good day to you.
You didn't hold that job long, Miss McGee.
Long enough. Oh, Clark Dennis. Hi, Clark.
Hello, Fibber. Say, did you want to go into business with somebody?
Oh, so you saw my ad, eh?
Yes, and I've got a great idea I want you to help me promote.
Okay, Clark, what is it?
Well, you know how all those movie stars wear those dark glasses.
Oh, sure. You know why they wear them dark glasses, don't you, Clark? It protects them from the glare of the other stars. Well, what about it?
Well, my idea is this. Let's manufacture some spectacles with plain glass and string together some toothpicks with thread for little tiny Venetian blinds on each lens. And that way, you know, we
never
could...
Never mind. No, I'm afraid the possibilities are too tremendous even for me, Clark. When you think of something a little more trivial, come in again.
Well, all right. Yeah. Gee, I wonder if J.P. Morgan would be interested in that.
Venetian blinds for spectacles. Here I am looking for a legitimate business proposition, and what do I get?
Hello, Fibber. Hello, Silly.
Hi, Mr. Mills, please.
No, hello, Billy. I suppose you want me to go in with you for the manufacture of martini glasses with the olive blown in the glass. Say, that ain't a bad idea, Billy. How'd you ever think of that?
I didn't.
Oh, then you must have heard it someplace.
You're the first one to mention it.
Well, then what's the idea of coming in here with my own idea? Don't you know that's plagiarism, Billy? Don't you know that you can be... Excuse me a minute, Billy. Come in.
Are you Mr. McGee?
Sure, you betcha, sis.
I believe you advertised for a partnership. Have you decided on anything yet?
Well, no, sis, I ain't yet. What you got?
I am the owner of the Wistful Vista Riding Academy. Horses, fine stock.
Mm-hmm.
I simply must leave town for a few weeks, and I need someone to take charge. You may have what you make for running it for me. Will you?
Sis, you're my man. I'll do it.
Splendid. But do you understand horses?
Do I understand horses? Why, sis, you remember them wild Russian Cossacks that used to come to the fairgrounds and ride four horses at once? Underneath them, under their necks, on their heads, and all stuff like that there?
Yes, I do.
Well, so do I. Used to scare me to death. As a matter of fact, sis, I was brought up in the Old West, so I know horses. Why, I even originated the Pony Express. Just 50 years ago last Sunday, sis, I inaugurated National Mare Mail Week. Why, sis, every time I turned around, I saw a horse. Sawhorse McGee, I was known as in them days.
Here come again.
Sawhorse McGee, the sinewy son of the saddle, socking away a sizable sum, a star of six shooting cinema serials, showing me steering a swaying stagecoach with a spanking span of spirited stallions, or straddling my supple steed, standing in the stirrups and spurring away safe and sound out of sinister situations, and sincerely certified the saddle squatting sensation of the century from the sun-soaked sands of the Sahara to the silvery cedars of the snow-capped Sierras. Whoa there!
Job, Mr. McGee. Fine. Be there this afternoon.
Okay. Oh, Billy. You've been standing there all this time, Billy? What was it you wanted again?
I wanted you to go into something with me.
Well, that's a coincidence. There's something I wanted you to go into.
What's that?
The next number. What is it?
Something tells me.
Go ahead, Billy. Something tells me I got a job. And his orchestra playing Something Tells Me. And just the right number to play while passing a livery stable. What do you think of this riding academy sale?
Well, it sure is an interesting place. You think you can handle it?
Why, certainly. The first thing I'm going to do is fix up the rates for renting horses.
Yes.
I think we ought to advertise a straight dollar an hour, returning a dollar every time a horse gets balky. We'll make our slogan something like this here. Come to the stable and try your luck. A dollar an hour and a buck.
Yeah, well, that's real good, Miss McGee.
Thank you. We got to advertise the fact that these horses are really broke.
They is?
Yes, sir.
Well, can't we fix them?
What I mean, is there tame? Why, there was one. Wistful Vista Academy of Equestrianism, Horsemanship, and Riding. McGee speaking. What say, madam? What color horses have we got? Well, what do you want to know that for, you to, huh? Oh, to match your riding habit. I see. I see. Well, you send a sample of the cloth over to us, sis, and we'll dye a horse for you. Send a point over. Hey, Sil, did you feed them horses?
Yes, sir. Yes, I gave them some hay and some oats, please, sir, but that little old corn was all on the cob, and I couldn't figure out how a horse was going to hold it while he ate it.
Don't be so dumb, Sil. You're supposed to hold it for him.
Hello, Fibber.
Oh, hello, Harpo. What you want, boy?
Do you board horses here?
Why, certainly we board horses here. Not only that, we get off of them here, too. We board horses. That's a silly question.
No, no, you don't understand. I mean, do you take care of other people's horses?
Oh, why, certainly. You want to leave a nag here?
Well, in a way, yes. I'd like to put in one of my plug.
I'll tell you what I'll do, Harpo. I'll ask the other horses if they mind if you leave your plug here.
Okay.
Hey, Philly, I thought Harpo better wants the corn if we can page four with a disc. How about it? Well, you heard what they said, Harpo.
No, what?
Nay.
Okay.
Me too. Oh, well, this is a horse show. We have to have a lot of corny stuff in it. By the way, Sil, half of them horses need new shoes.
Yes, high heels or low heels?
No. You better look up a good blacksmith, Sil. McGee Academy of Horse Riding and Equestrianship. What say, ma'am? A job for your son? Where'd he work last? In a brokerage office. Oh, sure. Send him over in the morning, ma'am. We'll let him water the stock. Reminds me of an old Wall Street trader I knew once, Sil. At one time, he cornered the market on sugar.
What's he doing now, please?
Selling sugar at the corner market. That's what I call poetic justice, Sil.
Hello there, Johnny. You got some pretty good horses here.
Absolutely the best, Junior. All but two of them are thoroughbreds. That is to say, two of them are thoroughbreds, all but.
Hey!
I says, what kind of a horse you want to ride?
Got a single footer?
No. We got nothing but four footers, old timer. We had a single footer once, but every time he tried to kick, he'd fall down.
That's pretty good, Johnny. But that ain't the way I heard it. The way I heard it, one feller says to the other feller, see, says, did you read the newspaper account about war in Europe, or is that account just a bunk? No, says the other feller, that ain't a bunk account. It's a bank account. France and Russia are endorsing the checks. I know quite a bit about foreign affairs, Johnny, for a feller that never had one.
You know, Mr. McGee, I don't believe that old man ever come in here to ride a horse.
No, he just comes in here to ride me. But after all, Sil, I'm...
Hello, Fibber. What's up?
Oh, hi, Clark. I'm running this riding academy now. You want to take a ride?
I can't ride.
Why not?
Can't keep my feet in the girdle.
Dear, dear. Can't keep your feet... Oh, my. What you going to sing, Clark?
Bewildered.
Swell. Go ahead, Clark.
Is just a memory, and yet I hope for your returning.
endless nights and endless days. Oh, love, why did you leave my soul without a spark? I'm in the dark.
Bewildering, Clark. Folks, that was Clark Dennis singing Bewildered, which is one of the two ways to get a little hoarse around here. Hey, Sil, did you look up a good blacksmith?
Yes, sir. But I couldn't find one.
Well, you better keep on trying, Sil. We got to get those horses fixed up. What's this coming here?
Oh, I say, my good fellow, take this jolly old animal, will you please?
Yes, I got him.
Well, Bud, how'd you enjoy the ride?
Oh, simply beastly, old man. That bally brute wouldn't jump, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I tried the blighter over a bit of brush, but he refused. He wouldn't even take offense, you know.
Oh, well, none of our horses will take offense, Bud. They know you mean well. That'll be $2, please. Come in again.
Oh, I say, my word, that's pretty cheeky of you, isn't it? After misrepresenting the bally old crowbait.
What you mean, misrepresenting him? Now, you be careful there, Bud, there now.
Oh, I say, but old fellow, you told me he was a genuine Arabian.
I still say he's an Arabian horse, Bud. Every time he comes to a patch of sand, he lays down.
Oh, I say, I fancy you're pulling my leg a bit, old chap. Really, now, haven't you a good high school horse?
High school horse. Please, Bud. High school horse. Why, we don't even consider a horse unless he's had 2 years of college. Why, three of our best animals are away right now taking postgraduate work. They can't graduate till they learn to post. You see that lantern hanging up there?
Yes, yes.
That belongs to that gray gelding in the third stall. He's going to night school.
Come now, old chap.
And say, speaking of college, you ought to seen the loud horse blanket one of them nags was wearing when he come home from Princeton. Shucks, I'll fix him. High school horses. Who's he think he's kidding? What's...
Say, Fibber.
Oh, Harpo, you back again?
Howdy, partner. Reckon your old sidekick can light a spell in this here crowl?
For heaven's sake, what's the matter with you, Wilcox?
Well, partners, I was just yipping across the desert just now. I just got to thinking. Got to thinking what an all-fired right smart thing it war to keep the ranch house clean and shiny with this year Johnson's Glow Coat. What's easy to use and dries so quick? Why, it's the sky hooting the stuff for a slab-sided old sign-winder like this.
Harpo, please. What is this? How come you're talking like a 10-cent magazine cowboy?
Partner, I'm right sorrowful about that. I surely am. But I knowed if I tried this year western saddle, it'd get me in the end. So long, partner.
Harpo's been reading so many 10-cent western magazines, he's getting chap happy. Hey, Sil, you found a blacksmith yet?
No, sir, but Miss McGee, please, sir, your horse is getting awful nervous.
Well, what's the matter with him, Sil?
Well, all horses get like that, I reckon, please, sir, with a wild animal around.
Wild animal? Where?
No place, sir, but horses is awful smart. I reckon they know that Mr. Mills' next number is Wildcat.
Oh. Wildcat, eh? Yeah. Well, I didn't even know that myself.
Well, some horses is smarter than others.
Yeah. Oh, is that so? You mean... Go ahead, Billy. Wildcat.
Thank you.
it, Sil. We simply got to locate a blacksmith someplace. We can't let them horses go.
Are you the riding instructor?
You betcha, sis. Do you want to sign up for the full course?
Well, how long is the course?
Well, that depends, sis. Some pupils pick it up after 5 lessons, and others we have to pick up after the first lesson. You got to have it?
I have jodhpurs.
You have? Sil, you better move away a little. This lady's got jodhpurs. My cousin had the jodhpurs once, sis, and we couldn't do a thing with him. It was worse than the screaming Mimis. Why, he...
I'm afraid you don't understand. Jodhpurs are ankle-length riding breeches.
Oh, them there. Well, that's okay, sis. We got several ankle-length horses here.
Do you have any five-gated horses?
You betcha, sis. That there horse right out there is a five-gated horse. She stumbles, shies, falters, trips, and bucks. She had one more gate, but some kid swiped it last Halloween.
Pardon me, but for an expert horseman, you seem very poorly informed.
Well, Wilbur Wright wasn't no transport pilot. Shush. Oh, well, I don't think we got a saddle that'd fit her anyway.
Excuse me, please, sir. But I was out in the stable just now, Mr. McGee, and one of them little old horses throwed his shoe, please, sir.
Back to him, Sil. He wants to play catch. Them horses are playful.
Yes, sir, but this ain't no joke, please, sir. There ain't hardly a horse that's got good shoes on him, sir. We gotta find us a blacksmith.
That's so. Gee, this is serious. We can't have them nags going around barefoot all summer. They might get athlete's foot or something. Hey, Sil.
Yes?
I got an idea. Saddle a horse with the best shoes, and I'll ride around the country till I find a good blacksmith. You watch the stable till I get back. Now, hurry. Now, get a move on,
yes,
Sil.
Yes, right away, Mr. McGee.
Now, let's see. Now, if I gallop over to the next town, I ought to come.
Oh, hello there, Fisher. What is this I'm hearing about you being a horse hostess?
What do you mean, a horse hostess, Nick? I'm running a riding academy. But don't bother me now. I got important
things. What are you putting those horse riding pants on for, Fisher? Are you going for a little Eddie Cantor through the woods? Or are you entering yourself in a steeple's choice?
Neither one, Nick. I gotta gallop around till I find a blacksmith. It's desperate. Now, don't bother me.
This is a very romantic puss idea, Fizzer. As a matter of fact, I'm just reading a fine book about the cowboys who is always riding through the stage brushes on a wild mustache.
That's a Mustang, Nick. Now, please, if you don't mind, I gotta get going. If you want to go for a ride, Sil will fix up a horse for you.
Oh, thank you, Fizzer. I would like to take a little horse ride, but there is not being a mantelpiece to eat off of at my house, and what do you think I am, starved to death?
Hey, Sil. Sil, you got that horse ready yet? Well, hurry up,
yes,
Sil.
Yes, here you are, Mr. McGee.
Good. Now, you watch the stable for me.
Yes.
Oh, there now. Easy there, Stormy Withers. Easy now.
Good luck, sir. I hope you find a little old blacksmith.
Thanks, Sil. I'll find one. Well, so long. Giddy up, Stormy Withers. Hey, Bud. You know anybody that'll shoe this horse for me?
Sure, I'll shoe him for you. Shoe!
Giddy up, Stormy Withers. Hey, sis. Can you help me find a blacksmith?
I'll try. Which way did he go?
He went for the... Giddy up, Stormy. Hey, Bud, can you tell me where I can find a good blacksmith?
No, but if you want something that'll wear like iron, try a Johnson's Wax on your floors and furniture.
Get it! Hey, Bud, is there a smithy around here?
No, but there's a Jonesy down at the filling station, a guy named Whitey.
Oh, never mind. Hi-ho with it! You know where there's a blacksmith shop?
5 miles right out this road, Johnny. You can't miss it. The Spreading Chestnut Blacksmith Shop.
Hot dog. At last. Much obliged, Junior. Get up with it. Ah, there's a blacksmith shop. Whoa, Stormy Withers. Whoa. Gotta get them shoes fixed. Hey there, blacksmith. Hey, Bud. Hey, you, the village chestnut, or blacksmith. Hey. Hey, Bud. Oh, boy. Oh, gee, Bud, that's... Oh, boy. You ain't got any idea how glad I am to see you, Bud. You're a sight for sore eyes. Yes, sir. Can you shoe half a dozen horses tomorrow?
Horses? Heavens no. But look, I just finished the duckiest pair of wrought handle candlesticks. See?
Oh, Shaw. Folks, you have just heard Chapter 13, Book 367 of One Man's Blacksmith. We wish to thank Mr. William Tell for allowing us to use his overture tonight, and we hope to be over at your house again next Tuesday night. Good night, folks. Good night, Molly.
Broadcasting from the campus of Henry Ford College, this is WHFR Dearborn. Listener-supported non-commercial radio featuring local and independent artists.
Founded in 2016 and sponsored by the Detroit Regional Chamber of Commerce, the Detroit Promise ensures that any student graduating from any high school in the city of Detroit will have a tuition-free path to an associate degree or technical certificate. Henry Ford College has been a proud participant in the Detroit Promise since the beginning. With 66% of all Detroit Promise students attending HFC, it is the largest Detroit Promise enrollment of any college. For more information, visit hfcc.edu/Detroit-Promise or DetroitPromise.com today.
What I know about courage, I learned from my adoptive mom. She said sometimes you just gotta hold on and know we'll get through this.
Mom, we are so high up. Hold my hand.
No, you hold my hand.
Here we go.
Learn about adopting a teen from foster care. You can't imagine the reward. Visit AdoptUSKids.org to find out more. This message is brought to you by AdoptUSKids, the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, and the Ad Council.
Lux presents Hollywood. Lever Brothers Company, the makers of Lux Toilet Soap, bring you the Lux Radio Theater, starring Gene Crane and Glenn Langan in Margie. Ladies and gentlemen, your producer, Mr. William Keeley.
Greetings from Hollywood, ladies and gentlemen. For me, and I think probably for you, the memories of high school are the gayest, pleasantest, and most nostalgic of all. And tonight, in that nostalgic vein, we take you back to 1928, a year of raccoon coats, flagpole sitters, miniature golf, and rumble seat romances. A crazy, colorful, romantic period that forms the backdrop of our play, from 20th Century Fox's screen hit, Margie. You'll meet the original stars, Gene Crane as Margie, and Glenn Langan, one of Hollywood's most promising young leading men, in his first appearance on our stage. Many things have changed since the flaming 20s of our play, but one fashion that still prevails is Lux soap for complexion care. Even in 1928, it was the beauty soap of film stars. And while the Lux Radio Theater had yet to be born, the early popularity of Lux soap was, I'm sure, already laying the foundations for this, the greatest national theater in the world. It's curtain time, and here's Act One of Margie, starring Gene Crane in the title role and Glenn Langan as Mr. Fontaine, with Jane Darwell as Grandma and Barbara Lawrence as Mary Bell.
My inspiration days are never blue.
It's a rainy Saturday afternoon, and in the attic of a pleasant little house in a pleasant little town, a young mother and her teenage daughter are rummaging through a dusty collection of trunks and boxes. The daughter has discovered an old phonograph and a carton of records.
can you imagine, Mother? The phonograph actually still works.
Well, after all, dear, it's not quite an antique yet.
You used to have to wind this thing every time you wanted to play a record?
Oh, we put up with a lot of hardships in those days. My goodness, will you look at these?
What are they?
Just an old pair of bloomers I used to wear when I was about your age.
Gee, they're hideous. I mean, well, they're so bulky.
Well, they were quite a problem now and then.
Mother, tell me all about the crazy and idiotic things you did when you were my age.
Well, I went to Central High School, just like you're doing.
Well, tell me about it. Tell me about some simply terrific event that happened in your life.
Well, I'm not so sure a terrific event in 1928 will seem so terrific to you in 1947.
Oh, Mother, now you're just being difficult.
Well, let's look at my old photograph album. Now, here, this is a picture of Johnny Green.
What's that thing he's wearing?
Why, a raccoon coat, of course. He was the only boy in school with a raccoon coat and a Stutz Black Hawk.
A what?
It was a kind of automobile, dear.
You went for him, huh?
Oh, I went for him all right. But it was Mary Bell who had him hogtied.
Mary Bell?
She used to live next door to us. Well, one day after school...
Hiya, Mary Bell.
Johnny, you're terrible. If you keep me waiting like this again...
Banana oil. Get in the car.
Oh, I promised we'd take home Margie, too.
Oh, for crying out loud. Do we always have to drag Margie McDuff along?
Well, I can't help it. After all, she does live next door to me.
Oh, boy, what a pain in the neck.
Say, did you see the new French teacher?
Yeah, I saw him.
Is he good looking? His name's Fontaine.
Look, if Margie doesn't show up in 2 minutes, we're going to have to go...
Shh, there she is. Hi, Margie.
Oh, hello, Mary Bell. Hi, Johnny.
Well, come on, McDuff. Don't just stand there.
I can't.
What do you mean you can't?
Mary Bell, come here a minute. Oh, please.
What's the matter?
Mary Bell, please.
Oh, just a minute, Johnny. What are you so flustered about?
Not so loud.
Huh?
Do you have a safety pin, Mary Bell?
What do you want a safety pin for?
The elastic in my bloomers. It just broke. I felt it.
I think I've got one in my purse.
Hey, what's the matter, McDuff? What are you standing so funny for?
Take him away. Oh, please take him away.
Here's the safety pin. You want us to wait for you?
No, just go on home. And if you dare tell Johnny Green what's the matter,
I'll kill you.
Oh, I won't. Goodbye, Margie.
Well, where's she going?
Well, Margie just decided to wait for something.
Oh, what's she waiting for, the fall?
Oh, Johnny, you're a scream. You don't know how funny that is.
Here I am, Margie. Hey, Margie.
Roy.
Gosh, I'm glad you waited for me. How come you didn't go home with Mary Bell?
Oh, because I didn't, that's all.
What's the matter, Margie? Anything wrong?
Oh, Roy,
hey,
you
shouldn't do that.
What?
Go around with safety pins in your mouth. I knew a kid once who swallowed a safety pin.
Roy, I wish you'd go home.
Can't I go home with you?
No, I've got some things to do in the library.
Okay, I'll go with you.
No.
Well, what are you walking so funny for, Margie? Anything I can do?
Yes. Go home and don't bother me.
Well, gee whiz. Okay, okay.
Oh, hello, Margie.
Hello, Miss Palmer.
I have those books for you for your debate.
Oh, yes, the debate. Can I pick them up in a minute, Miss Palmer? I want to go over there in the corner.
What's over there in the corner?
I've got to hitch up. I mean, I've got to catch up on my... political philosophy.
Of course, dear, run along.
Thank you.
Oh, hello, Ralph. Well, how does our new French teacher like Central High?
Well, so far, very much, but it's really surprising, Isabel. You should see my classes. Standing room only. I never heard of such a passion to acquire French.
Girls, mostly, I suppose.
Yes, I believe they are in the majority of that.
You've been the talk of the school all day long. The girls think you're too darling for words.
Oh, come on now, Isabel. Cut it out. Say, this is quite a nice library you've got here.
Would you like a book?
Yes, I would.
Help yourself, Ralph. We still trust the faculty.
Oh, hello. What's the matter?
Nothing. I just didn't know you were there.
Well, I didn't know you were there until I took these books off the shelf. Then I saw you on the other side of the rack. Do you like poetry, too?
Poetry?
Isn't there poetry on your side?
Political philosophy.
Oh, I see.
But I'm all finished with what I came in here for. Goodbye, Mr. Fontaine.
Wait a minute. You're in one of my classes, aren't you?
Yes, Mr. Fontaine.
Well, do you two know each other?
Yes, Isabel. I call Miss Palmer Isabel. I've been good friends of hers for some time.
Margie's our champion debater. We're very proud of her. Why, she's the youngest student in her class.
Well, that's fine. As a matter of fact, Margie, the principal asked me to be chairman of the next debate. That's Wednesday, isn't it?
Yes, Mr. Fontaine.
Good. Well, if you excuse me now, I'm looking for a certain volume of Wordsworth.
Why the long face, Margie?
Why did you have to tell him that I'm a debater and younger than other people? And when a person meets another person for practically the first time, she doesn't want to be known as a debater and younger than other people.
Oh, but I'm sure he'll appreciate your being so smart. Don't you think he's cute?
I don't know. I don't generally notice how teachers look.
Well, he is cute. Your books are on my desk, Margie. Good night, dear.
Good night, Miss Palmer.
I'm sure glad I waited for you, Margie. But I figured if I sat there long enough, you'd come out sometime.
You're very nice to carry my books, Roy.
Oh, that's okay. Say, when you came out of the library, who was that opened the door for you?
Mr. Fontaine, the new French teacher.
What did he want?
He merely happened to open the door for me.
I don't trust Frenchmen.
He isn't French.
Well, then why does he teach it?
Oh, Roy, sometimes you act just like... But that's Papa.
Huh?
Papa! 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 Oh, golly, that's awful.
What's awful?
Oh, that car that just went by. That was my father. I miss seeing him.
You know, Margie, I've been to your house several times, and I've never met your father.
Well, he doesn't live with us.
Why doesn't he? I mean, are your folks divorced or something?
Oh, of course not. My mother died when I was a baby, and ever since, I've lived with my grandmother.
Well, doesn't your grandmother like your father or something?
Well, of course she does. It's only... Well, for goodness sake, Roy, I don't see how it's any of your business.
Okay, okay.
It's just that Papa was all broken up when my mother died, and he went away for a long time. And then when he came back, he just started living by himself. And it's better that way, too, because, well, after all, what does a businessman know about girls?
Oh.
Papa's a very wonderful man, and we're very fond of each other. And he has a terrific business, so we can't always see each other all the time, so we try to see each other on Wednesday afternoon.
Oh.
Of course, he pays for everything, but... Well, I mean, Papa's a widower.
Oh, yeah, he would be. I mean, if your mother... Yeah, of course, see what you mean.
Well, come on, Roy. I gotta get home sometime. Well, thanks a lot for walking home with me, Roy. I guess you better be going now. Goodbye.
Oh, I'm in no hurry.
Oh, well, would you like to come in and say hello to my grandmother?
Sure, why not?
Okay, wait here on the porch a second.
Pretty late, aren't you, Margie?
I know, Grandma, but I couldn't help it. You see how...
I know. Mirabelle stopped in and told me all about it. I've told you a dozen times to fix those bloomers. Naturally, they fell down.
Oh, Grandma, please. He's on the porch.
Who's on the porch?
You can come in, Roy.
Hello, Mrs. McSweeney.
Come on in, Roy, and sit down. Sit down.
Thanks, Mrs. McSweeney. You know... I've always been meaning to ask you about your fireplace here in the living room.
What's the matter with that fireplace?
Oh, I don't mean the fireplace. I mean that old lock and chain hanging up on the mantel here.
Young man, I lashed myself to the railing of the White House with that lock and chain. It took four cops and a hacksaw to pry me loose. I spent 2 days in jail.
Oh, gee whiz, what for?
For a very noble cause.
Oh, really, Grandma? I don't think Mr. Hornsdale's very interested in politics.
Then it's high time he took an interest. Young man, I was campaigning for the right of women to vote. They called us suffragettes.
Oh, yeah, I read about that. My father says a woman's place is in the home.
You tell your father to wake up. A woman's place is wherever she makes it. Now, I've raised Margie to take a deep interest in politics. And someday, I hope she'll be the first woman president of the United States.
Oh.
Grandma, please.
A woman president couldn't be any worse than some of the men we've had.
Well, Roy, I know you're in a hurry to get home. It's so frightfully late as it is. Well, goodbye, Roy. I'll see you tomorrow.
Call on us again, young man.
Yeah, well, goodbye, Mrs. McSweeney. Margie.
I'm sorry you have to rush off.
Oh, I don't have to go yet.
Well, thanks again, Roy. Goodbye. Oh, Grandma.
What's the matter with you?
Don't you understand? I don't want to be the first woman president of the United States.
For heaven's sakes, why not?
Not even if you paid me. And I wish you wouldn't keep telling that to people.
Oh, now, honey, what's wrong?
Well, first Miss Palmer tells people that I'm a debater and younger than other people. And then you have to go and tell Roy about that you were chained to the White House and sent to jail. And then about me being the first woman president. Oh, he'll probably never come back.
I bet a cookie he phones you right after dinner.
Do you think so? Grandma, in your opinion, is Roy's Adam's apple very noticeable?
Why, no, dear.
You're just being nice. You can't help noticing it, I guess. It hits you right in the eye. Oh, well, I guess Roy's better than nobody.
Well, you wouldn't want a silly, vain, conceited boy like Johnny Green for a beau, would you?
Johnny? Oh, yes. Yes, Grandma. I certainly would. Come in. Oh, hello, Cynthia.
Still working on that debate, Miss Margie, or you just listen to that phonograph of yours?
Oh, I'm working, Cynthia.
Your grandma said the time you was in bed. Why are you wearing your arms around like that for?
I'm rehearsing my gestures.
You ain't rehearsing, honey. You shadowboxing.
Cynthia, do you know anything about Frenchmen?
All I know is that they eat frog legs and snails.
Oh, I'm sure Mr. Fontaine wouldn't eat snails. Oh, every girl in school's got a crush on him already.
Including you.
I've got more sense than to get a crush on a teacher. Fat chance I'd have anyway. Cynthia, do you think a woman could learn to love a man with an Adam's apple?
Well, a friend of mine, her husband's got a garter and she's got 7 kids. Don't seem to trouble her none. Psst, come over here to the window, Miss Margie. Look down there.
What?
There on Maribel's porch. She and that raccoon coat boy. My, they've been kissing this couple. Been at it most of the evening.
I know.
You've been peeking too?
Of course not. I only meant... Well, anyway, how can people waste their time like that? Oh, I think it's disgusting.
Mm-hmm. Well, good night, Miss Martin.
Good night, Cynthia. It's really not so noticeable. Not when Roy wears a high collar. Oh, well. I'll be out in a sec, Roy. Look, Grandma, his father let Roy have their Model T today.
Well, that's fine. Here you are, Margie, a spare handkerchief.
Oh, I won't need one, Grandma.
No, but Roy will. That boy always has the sniffles.
Golly, I almost forgot.
Huh?
My ice skates. Everybody's going ice skating after the debate. Grandma, do you suppose maybe Papa would come and hear me debate? I mean, it is Wednesday anyway, and all it'd mean is going to the high school instead of here, and he could hear me debate.
I think it's a wonderful idea.
Then ask him, Grandma. Call him now.
I do nothing of the sort. You stop by his office and ask him yourself. Oh,
but I don't think Papa likes me to stop in his office. He's always so busy.
Oh, rubbish. Now you do as I say.
Well, all right. And don't forget, Grandma, the high school auditorium at 3 o'clock.
You're sure quiet, Margie. Golly, don't worry about your father. You left a message for him, didn't you?
Yes. It wasn't his fault he wasn't in his office.
Sure is funny, Margie. I never knew your father was an undertaker.
He's a mortician. And what's so funny about it?
Oh, I just mean I didn't know he had his own funeral parlors here on Ridge Street.
It's not what you meant at all.
Well, I'm sure it's a very interesting business. I'll bet it's a good business, too. I mean, well, gee whiz, people are always dying.
He can't help being in the business he's in.
Oh, it's all right. I don't mind, honest.
Yes, you do. Everybody minds. I mind. Oh, I'd give anything on earth if he was just a bricklayer or something.
Do you suppose he'll come and hear you debate?
How do I know? Papa can hardly plan anything. It's just like you said. People are always dying.
Ladies and gentlemen, you've just heard Miss Margie MacDuff, captain of the Central High debating team. The next speaker for the negative is Mr. Arnold Harrison of Polytechnic High School.
Mr. Chairman, honorable judges, worthy opponents, and ladies and gentlemen, my worthy opponents, the Central High orators, have spoken to you of the high cost of keeping the Marines in Nicaragua.
Boy, oh boy, Maryville, I've had about all of that I can stand.
But where will we go, Johnny?
Ice skating.
Oh, but we can't. We're supposed to stay in the auditorium and listen.
Not me.
Anyway, the orchestra won't start at the skating rink until 4 o'clock.
Well, we'll just stand here in the corridor then. If I go back in the auditorium, I'll fall asleep.
Somebody's coming.
I beg your pardon. I beg your pardon. Is there a debate going on in there?
And how?
Oh, thank you, young man. Thank you very much.
Hey, can you imagine somebody wanting to hear that stuff?
Johnny, do you know who that was?
Who?
Margie's father, Mr. Angus MacDuff. He's an undertaker.
Oh, poor Margie. A grandmother who's nuts and an undertaker for an old man.
Oh, you.
Of course not. Let me compare now the record of the Nicaraguan people during the 10 years preceding the arrival of our Marines with the notable achievements since made in that troubled land. Why, as far back as 1900...
And now, again in rebuttal, Miss Margie MacDuff.
Ladies and gentlemen, the strongest argument that our opponents have been able to advance this afternoon is that American occupation will raise the standard of living of the Nicaraguans and enable them to buy American plumbing. Ladies and gentlemen, would you turn in liberty for a bathtub? Would you? Where is the conscience and the heart of America? If we can say, give us liberty or give us death, then we have no right to tell the people of Nicaragua that they should take bathtubs instead of freedom. Ladies and gentlemen, we fought in 76, in 1860, and in 1918 to make the world safe for democracy. And we do it again and again. Don't let us ever forget our brave past. Don't let the flag of the United States mean bathtubs and plumbing instead of liberty. I say to you, take the Marines out of Nicaragua and bring them home to defend liberty always, but never plumbing. Thank you.
Gosh, Margie, you are wonderful.
Jimmy, he's here. My father's here.
Where, Margie? Where?
In the fourth row with my grandma and... Mr. Fontaine.
You know, Angus, sitting here and watching those children ice skate, I've a mind to rent a pair myself. Well, are you glad you came, Mr. Fontaine?
I wouldn't have missed this for anything. And I might easily have, Mrs. McSweeney, if you hadn't introduced yourself at school.
I had to introduce myself. Margie's got a crush on you.
Well, Mr. MacDuff, your daughter's almost as good a skater as she is a debater. You know, Margie would look awfully nice in a skating outfit like Maribel Tenner's.
Well, buy her one, Grandma. Buy her one. Just send me the bill.
You approve of a young girl exposing her bare legs, Mr. Fontaine?
I certainly do. Always keep in mind, Mrs. McSweeney, that I studied in Paris, France.
She's right. She's right. The child is right.
Agnes, what are you mumbling about?
We should take the Marines out of Nicaragua. She's absolutely right. Yes, sir. I'll write my congressman about it. Might even send a telegram to Senator Whipple.
Good.
Why did we send the Marines down there in the first place? You tell me that, sir. You just tell me that.
I'm sorry I'm such a terrible ice skater, Margie. Maybe when they play a slower tune, I'll do better.
You're doing beautifully, boy. Isn't it fun?
No. Look at Maribel and Johnny.
Oh, they do skate divinely.
Couple of show-offs. Gosh, Margie, that sure was a swell speech you made this afternoon.
Oh, thank you, Roy.
And you look, well, you look so sort of intense and full of fire.
Golly, I did.
Hi, Margie. Hello, Roy.
Hello, Maribel.
Believe me, I'm divine. Oh, hello, Johnny.
Hi, McDuff.
Well, I won't be long, Johnny.
Where's she going?
Oh, she's got to get another lace for her shoe.
Well, just don't stand here, Johnny. Can't you see Margie wants you to skate with her?
Oh, don't be silly, Roy. Well, he doesn't want to skate with me.
Oh, I don't mind. Come on, McDuff.
Why, Johnny.
That girl is right. Rank imperialism, that's what it is. Why don't we let the Nicaraguans mind their own business?
Oh, forget it, Angus.
Huh?
Look at your daughter. She's skating with that Johnny Green.
She's waving at us.
Hi, Margie. You're doing fine.
Wait a minute. They've stopped skating. Something's wrong with Margie.
She's holding her stomach. I'll bet it was those hot dogs she and Roy were eating before.
Oh, what's the matter, Margie? You sick?
No. Just go away, Johnny, please.
But if you don't feel good, you better hang on to me. Hey, Mary Bell.
I'm coming.
I've got to sit down.
Here? On the ice?
I've got to. And go away.
Well, gee whiz, okay.
Mary Bell, stand in front of me. Oh, please.
Margie, you're losing something. Look.
I know. I never did fix them. What'll I do?
Gosh, I don't know. Look, they're coming. Your grandma and your father and Mr. Fontaine. Mr. Fontaine, gee, are you lucky.
Hey, what's happened? Is she badly hurt?
Oh, it looks like something fell down. I mean, she fell down, I guess. Oh, Margie, sit on him. Sit on him.
I'm trying to. Oh.
It's probably your ankle. Pardon me, please.
Let me in there. Clear out of here, everybody. Go on. Shoo.
Oh, my. It is my ankle. My ankle hurts.
Well, I'll get a doctor.
Just relax, Angus.
I've got a muster. I can bind her ankle, temporarily at least.
Now, Margie, stop squirming. What are you looking for?
Come here, Grandma.
Well?
Grandma. My bloomers.
Your what?
Grandma.
Where are they?
I'm sitting on them. I think. But if I get up...
Well, for heaven's sake.
Maybe while Daddy and Mr. Fontaine are fixing my ankle, I can sort of slip them into your coat.
Well, hurry up.
Get ready, Grandma. Grandma, they're gone.
What do you know? Angus, I think you and Mr. Fontaine better get a doctor after all. I'll stay right here with Margie while you talk.
Johnny,
wasn't it awful?
I can't figure out what happened to her, Mary Bell. She was skating fine, and all of a sudden, she kind of lost her equilibrium.
You said it, Johnny. Her best embroidered ones, too.
In a moment, we'll return with Act Two of Margie.
Here's Mr. Keeley at the microphone.
We continue with the second act of Margie, starring Jean Crane in the title role and Glenn Langan as Mr. Fontaine. Well, let's leave 1928 for a brief moment and return to the attic in the pleasant little house, where the young Bobby Soxer continues to press her mother for the secrets of her youth.
Holy cow, Mother. You mean to say you lost your bloomers in front of all those people at the skating rink?
I'm afraid I did, darling. But I was hoping desperately that no one besides Grandma and Mary Bell knew the awful truth. The others had a vague idea that I'd sprained my ankle or something. Apart from the bloomers, I'd had a very happy day.
Certainly have had a big day.
Oh, a wonderful day, Grandma.
Call losing your best bloomers wonderful?
Golly, no. But I did get to skate with Johnny Green. And Papa came to the debate and Mr. Fontaine. And Papa stayed for dinner and kissed me goodnight twice.
I'm afraid you got your father all worked up over Nicaragua.
He seemed very interested.
I still wonder what happened to your bloomers. They couldn't have just walked away.
Oh, Grandma, please, let's not talk about it. I'll never be able to face anyone again.
Now, who on earth?
Well, it couldn't be Roy. Maybe it's just Mary Bell.
Who is it, Cynthia?
It's that mansion business, Sweeney. It's Mrs. Fontaine.
Oh, no. No, Grandma. Just look at me in my bathrobe.
Well, come on in, Mr. Fontaine.
But I'll bet he saw. I mean, this afternoon, my...
Well, how nice of you to stop by.
Good evening, Mrs. McSweeney. Hello, Margie. I happened to be taking a walk in the neighborhood. I often take a walk after dinner, and it occurred to me to drop in and see how the invalid was getting along. Well, how is your ankle, Margie?
Oh, it's fine. It hardly hurts at all.
Well, I'm delighted. After all, to be certainly ashamed not to be able to go to the prom next week because of a sprained ankle.
Have a chair, Mr. Fontaine.
Thank you.
Margie, if your foot's really better, why don't you go to your room and get Mr. Fontaine's muffler?
Oh, yes. It was really very nice of you to bind my ankle with your lovely muffler, Mr. Fontaine.
Well, get it. That's probably what he stopped by for.
Oh, Margie, just a minute. Here.
A package? For me?
Yes, in the excitement this afternoon, I believe you lost your handkerchief.
Oh. I'll get your muffler.
A handkerchief, Mr. Fontaine?
Well.
That was very tactful, thank you.
Remember, Mrs. McSweeney, I studied in Paris, France.
Margie! Hey, Margie!
Oh, hello, Mary Bell.
I just saw the light go on in your room. What did Mr. Fontaine want? That was him, wasn't it?
Oh, he just came to call on me.
But aren't you excited? I mean, gosh, Mr. Fontaine, did you know he was coming?
Well, naturally. People don't let people call on people unless they have permission.
Did he bring you anything? I mean, candy or flowers?
Oh, yes. He brought me a lovely gift.
Margie, what?
Mary Bell, when a person receives an intimate gift from a gentleman friend, she doesn't go around blabbing about what it is.
Intimate? What do you mean? What did he bring you?
Oh, something.
Margie, do you suppose Mr. Fontaine is going to invite you to the prom?
The prom? Well, I really don't know what Mr. Fontaine's motives are. Excuse me, Mary Bell. Men hate to be kept waiting, you know. The prom? Oh, as if anyone else had asked me about Roy Hornsdale. But what if he does? Oh, Mr. Fontaine. Oh, gosh.
Margie?
I'm coming, Grandma.
Take it easy. Mr. Fontaine just left. He said you can bring his muffler to school tomorrow. Margie, did you hear me?
Yes, Grandma. I heard.
Margie, why aren't you dressed? Didn't you tell me the prom starts at 8:30?
I'm not going to the prom, Grandma. That was Roy on the phone just now.
He's got the sniffles again.
Oh, it's his tonsils, too. His folks won't let him go. Oh, it doesn't matter. I just as soon stay home.
Well, Mary Bell's going to the prom with Johnny. I'm sure they'd be glad to take you along.
Without an escort? I'd rather die. Besides, Johnny doesn't like me tagging along even to come home from school.
Look out the window. She's coming here.
Who?
Mary Bell. Margie, 20 years from now, you'll look at Johnny Green and you'll wonder what you ever saw in him.
20 years from now, I'll be an old woman and it won't matter. I'm coming, Mary Bell.
She'll just gloat over you. Don't you dare tell her what happened to Roy.
Well, it's true, isn't it?
You could pretend, couldn't you?
Hello, Mary Bell.
Margie, I just simply had to come over. Look, Johnny sent them. Imagine 2 orchids. Oh, hello, Mrs. McSweeney.
Hello, you flapper.
Oh. Orchids. Well, I suppose you'll be going with Roy, huh?
No, his cold's worse.
Oh, Margie.
But I'm still going.
You are? But who with?
Oh, you'll find out.
Margie McDuff, I bet you've been holding out on me right along. But it couldn't be, not with him. Not with Mr. Fontaine.
They say Frenchmen dance very well.
Oh, gosh. Well, I really better get back. I'm going to take a bubble bath in a simply terrific perfume I have, which absolutely is guaranteed to intoxicate men by its fragrance. Goodbye, Margie.
Goodbye, Mary Bell.
Mr. Fontaine. Gosh.
I'm going up to my room, Grandma.
Yes, dear. I'll get the phone. Hello?
Hello? Hello, Grandma. This is Angus. I hope I didn't disturb anybody.
Angus McDuff, you don't have to apologize to call up here. What's on your mind?
Why, not a thing, Grandma, not a thing. I just wondering how everyone is.
Say, hold the line a second. Margie! Margie! I just wanted to be sure the coast was clear, Angus.
What do you mean, Grandma? Incidentally, you'll be very interested to know I just threw a salesman out of my office.
You did? Why?
Tried to sell me a gross of hand-dipped candles made in Nicaragua. Oh, I told him a thing or two. Made it the point of our bayonets, I told him. Don't talk to me about candles, I said, until you can bring me word that our Marines have been withdrawn, sir.
Were the candles any good?
Well, what do I care? Nothing is good, madam, if it betrays the heart and conscience of America.
Angus, have you got anything special to do tonight?
We Americans fought in 76. In... what do you mean, have I anything to do?
Well, have you?
Well, Mr. Van Buren of the Forest Acres Mortician Service was coming over to discuss a merger of our interests.
Well, how about merging your interests with Margie's?
Huh?
Angus, she's had her heart set on going to the high school prom tonight. Only this boy she was going with can't make it.
Well, that's a little out of my line, Grandma. I haven't danced in 20 years.
Who cares?
Well, I could see Van Buren on Monday.
Good. Now, don't be later than 8 o'clock, and don't you dare show up without a corsage.
And Margie likes gardenias, doesn't she?
Gardenias, my foot. Orchids. 3 orchids.
Yes, Grandma. 8 o'clock with 3 orchids.
Thanks, Angus. Goodbye. Margie! Margie! Come down here. I've got news for you.
But I simply don't understand, Grandma. Who's coming to take me to the prom?
Now stop asking questions and get into your formal.
Grandma, if you called someone and made him take me, I'll never forgive you.
He called me. He's a great admirer of yours.
It's not Joe Kelly, Grandma. He's only 15 and his hands are always clammy.
He's much older than 15. And his hands are not clammy.
Grandma, do you remember that bubble bath I gave you for Christmas?
Of course.
Would you let me use a little? Mary Bell's taking a bubble bath, and she says it simply intoxicates men with its exotic fragrance, and so I thought...
Well, help yourself, honey. Well, hurry up.
If you don't hold still, Miss Margie, I'll never get you hooked up.
Oh, I'm sorry, Cynthia. Grandma, do you think I look sophisticated?
Well, yes, for your age.
The doorbell?
I'll go down.
Grandma, who is it? You've simply got to tell me.
You'll find out. He's on time anyway.
Don't worry, honey. As soon as she's downstairs, I'll go down, too, and take a peek. And I'll tell you who it is.
Well, this is a surprise.
I hope you'll excuse me, but I was driving by, so I...
Well, you look very nice in your tuxedo, Mr. Fontaine. And that corsage is lovely.
I'm about to call for Mrs. Palmer. You know, the school librarian. I'm taking her to the prom tonight. I thought I'd leave this for Margie. It's her French theme. She was anxious to know what grade I'd given her.
What grade did you give her?
Hey, of course. You know, Margie's an exceptionally bright child, Mrs. McSweeney. An enchanting child, I might add.
Child, indeed. I doubt if you're 8 years older.
Well, frankly, I did lie a little bit about my age to get on the faculty here. Well, I suppose Margie's going to the prom. Who's taking her?
Her father.
Oh? Well, just between us, I wish I were. You know, it's a very strange thing. I've never seen a girl...
Him, Miss Margie, that Frenchman. My, my, and is he dressed up and with flowers, too?
But it can't be, Mr. Fontaine. Oh, Cynthia, do you suppose Grandma bribed him to take me on account of I didn't have anyone else?
He don't need no bribe, honey. He's a young man, ain't he? And you a pretty girl, ain't you? Child, I've been telling you that all along.
Do you really think he likes me? Oh, I've had a crush on him ever since the day he came to Central High. My diary's simply full of him, Cynthia.
Well, it looks like a two-way crush to me, honey. Now, go on, get out there. Go on, get.
Margie, well, good evening. How pretty you look.
Oh, thank you. You look very pretty, too. I mean, you look...
Excuse me, telephone.
Oh, what a beautiful corsage. Why, how perfectly lovely of you to bring me flowers.
Margie, I...
Oh, they're just beautiful.
Margie, this French theme of yours, I thought that perhaps you... Well, Margie, that...
For you, Margie, it's Helen Day.
Excuse me a second, Mr. Fontaine. Oh, I know I'm going to wake up and find this is all just a dream.
Margie, you don't understand.
Hello, Helen.
Mrs. McSweeney.
Don't have to tell me, I know. She thinks you're taking her.
But what am I going to do?
Well, it's all my fault. We've simply got to think of something.
And mine are camellias, Helen. Oh, they're simply gorgeous. Look, Helen, I have to fly out. Mr. Fontaine's waiting for me. Okay, I'll see you at the prom. Goodbye. Helen thought I couldn't go to the prom on account of Roy's tonsils, Mr. Fontaine. But when I told her you were taking me, why, she was just speechless. Oh, this card. This card on my corsage. I'm going to put this card in my scrapbook and keep it forever. Why, I'll even... The card, it says, Miss Palmer.
I'm sorry, Margie. That's what I was trying to explain to you. You see, I stopped by merely to bring you your French theme. It's excellent.
Thank you.
Margie.
Let her go.
Oh, this is terrible. Look, I'll call Miss Palmer up and explain. She'll understand.
No, now you just run along, Mr. Fontaine. Margie wouldn't go with you now in a million years.
Margie! Hey, Margie! Margie!
Hello, Mary Bell.
Margie, Helen just phoned and said Mr. Fontaine was over at your house now.
Oh, absolutely. He's here.
Well, aren't you thrilled to death? Margie, listen. Why don't you and Mr. Fontaine sit with us tonight?
Well, it's okay by me, but he's probably made other arrangements.
Well, go down and ask him. He won't mind just so he's sitting next to you. Gosh, Margie, how'd you ever do it?
Oh, honestly, Mary Bell, you're so funny.
What?
You're so gullible. Just as bad as Helen. She fell for it, too.
Fell for what?
Oh, honestly, it's just a scream. Well, I'm not going with Mr. Fontaine. I just pretended he was taking me just for fun. Oh, you don't really think I'd be seen at a prom with a teacher, do you?
But didn't he bring you a corsage? Helen said.
Oh, that was absolutely priceless. Well, I pretended to think they were for me, just to see what he would do. And he was so fussed and so embarrassed that it was all I could do to keep from bursting out laughing. Honestly, Mary Bell, he was a scream.
Margie McDuff, I just don't understand you.
Oh, I wish I were dead. I wish I were dead.
We pause now for station identification. This is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.
And you are listening to Radio Vault on WHFR Dearborn, the station making waves. We're listening to Lux Radio Theater from 1947.
In a moment, we'll return with Act Three of Margie. Tonight's guest is the young 20th century Fox starlet, Randy Stewart, lovely representative of our home state of Kansas.
Well, I wasn't in Kansas long, Mr. Keeley. My folks were in show business. Most of my childhood was spent traveling with them.
You started acting in stock at the age of three, didn't you, Randy?
That's right. Then turned to radio and finally pictures.
Well, you have an excellent background for the screen. And they tell me at 20th Century Fox that you're one of their most promising young players.
Well, they've given me every chance to learn. Watching an actress like Betty Grable is an education in itself. I've spent every moment I could on the set of Mother Wore Tights.
Then you've seen Betty in her most important role to date. She and Dan Daly make a great team of lovable stage hoofers in Mother Wore Tights.
They're two of the smoothest dancers I ever saw. And Betty's part as the mother gives her dramatic talents full play. Oh, and isn't her wardrobe really spectacular? Just dozens of different costumes and hairstyles.
All greatly enhanced by Technicolor.
Yes, and that brings up a point of special interest to you, Mr. Kennedy.
What's that, Miss Stewart?
Well, I was in Miss Grable's dressing room one day watching her put on her makeup. And it took an unusually short while because of her very fair, smooth skin.
Thanks, and good luck to you, Miss Randy Stewart. Here's your producer, William Keeley.
Our curtain rises on Act Three of Margie, starring Jean Crane as the lady in question and Glenn Langan as Mr. Fontaine.
Margie, you've been my inspiration. Days are never blue.
Once again, we swing briefly back to the present, where, upstairs in the attic, mother and daughter comb through the events of 20 years ago. From the album of photographs, Joyce has just taken a picture. Her mother smiles reflectively as she looks at it.
Yes, Joyce, this is a picture of the 1928 high school prom.
Oh, and you're not even there. Oh, gee, what an awful break, not being able to go to the prom.
Oh, but I did go. And there's my picture. See?
that you? Golly. But who brought you?
Well, about 10 minutes after Mr. Fontaine had left the house, two other gentlemen arrived on our front porch. One of them was Roy Hornsdale.
Why, it's you, Mr. McDuff. Good evening.
Good evening, young man. Good evening.
Gosh, is that your car? That log limousine?
It's one of my cars, yes.
Gosh. How come you're calling on Margie on Saturday?
A man does not call on his daughter.
Oh, Margie says you always call Wednesdays. You bringing her flowers?
Yes.
Hey, you're not bringing her flowers left over from a...
Young man, they have an expression in Nicaragua that very aptly describes a person of your ill manners. It goes... Oh, what am I wasting my time talking to you for? Who are you, anyway?
I'm Roy Hornsdale. Gee whiz, Mr. McDuff, don't you remember me? I was at the skating rink the afternoon Margie hurt her ankle.
Oh.
Hasn't she told you about me?
No. And either you ring that doorbell or let me.
Oh, she's a wonderful girl, Mr. McDuff.
I'm well aware of that fact.
I was supposed to take her to the prom tonight, but... I got a cold.
Then go to bed.
My folks said I could come over as long as we didn't go out and I kept warm.
Does anyone believe in coming in? What is this, a convention?
Oh, hello, Grandma.
What are you doing here, Roy?
Good evening, Mrs. McSweeney. I figured since Margie's not going to the prom...
And what makes you think she's not going to the prom?
Huh?
Cynthia? Take Roy into the kitchen and get him some hot milk or something.
Milk? Milk?
Get in here, Mr. Hornsdale.
Margie! He's here, honey! Now, listen, Angus, I should explain, but I haven't got time. Margie's been crying. Now, don't ask why. Just be very tactful.
Tactful? Did that sniveling boy in there make her cry?
Oh, no. Roy's quite innocent.
Oh.
Hello, Papa.
Margie, well, come on down, my dear. Oh, you look beautiful. Simply beautiful.
Why, thank you. Papa, you're all dressed up.
Well, you wouldn't want him to go to the prom in a business suit, would you? He's taking you. That was the big surprise.
Honestly, Papa, you're taking me? Are you sure you want to?
Honey, I've waited over 16 years for the privilege. Here.
Orchids. Papa, 3 orchids.
Well, I hope you won't be disappointed, Margie. I'm not a very good dancer.
Oh, Papa, I'd rather be going to the dance with you than anyone else in the whole world. Excuse me while I get my coat, Papa.
Well, Angus, what are you thinking?
I was thinking, Grandma, that my daughter is just as pretty and every bit as sweet as yours ever was.
I'm ready, Papa. Good night, Grandma.
Good night, dear. Gee whiz, is Margie going out? She's gone out.
Oh, gee whiz, I came here to read poetry to her. Who am I going to read poetry to now?
Cynthia?
Not to me, Mr. Hornsdale, and finish your milk.
Maribel?
It's Margie.
And her father. How you've changed, Mr. Fontaine.
I beg your pardon?
Come on, Papa. Did you see him, Johnny? Her father.
Papa, but I want to explain what happened tonight.
It doesn't matter, honey. Whatever happened was a wonderful break for me. Now, let's see if we can find a table.
But how come Margie came with her old man?
Why, I suppose she wanted to be sure of dancing with someone, Johnny.
Hey, come to think of it, it's the first time I've ever seen Margie.
And just what does that mean?
I don't know. Baby.
Is this table all right, Papa? Are you sure?
Oh, this is fine, dear, fine. I'll get some refreshments and...
Good evening, Margie.
Hello, Mrs. Palmer.
Good evening, Margie. Evening, Mr. McDuff. Nice party, isn't it?
Oh, yes, yes. Yes, indeed. Who is that with Mr. Fontaine?
Miss Palmer, our librarian.
Oh, very attractive.
She's well preserved for her age.
Margie, that's a waltz they're playing.
Yes, Papa.
Shall we try it?
Oh, I'd love to. Papa, do you know this is the first time that you've ever danced with me?
Second time.
When?
When you were about 3 months old.
I beg your pardon, but may I cut in, sir?
Well, by all means, young man. By all means.
Johnny.
Well, you sure had them all fooled, Margie. They thought you were coming with Mr. Fontaine.
Why, how absurd.
Yeah, that's what I told them. I said, why would she want to come with some drip from the faculty when he...
May I cut in?
Oh, for Pete's sake, where did you come from?
May I?
Well, yeah. Yeah, I... Well, see you later, Margie.
Thanks, Johnny.
Not even one little smile, Margie?
I don't feel like smiling.
Why?
Oh, I made such a fool of myself. You're just trying to be nice. You don't have to dance with me.
Between you and me, Margie, I'd rather dance with you than anyone else in this room.
If you only knew how I feel. If you... What did you say?
I said I'd rather dance with you than anyone else in this room, and I meant it.
Anyone?
Anyone.
Oh.
Look, Maribel, Margie's doing all right.
Oh, it's just a waltz. Who wants to waltz? Besides, he's just taking pity on her, like Johnny did.
Oh, I sure wish Mr. Fontaine would take pity on me. Well, what do you know? Johnny's taking pity on her again.
I did it to you, Johnny. I guess you can do it to me.
I didn't think I'd see you so soon, Johnny.
Hey, gee whiz, Margie. Where you been all my life?
Right under your nose, I guess.
Hey, you're sure a smooth dancer. How about doing this more often?
Well, I think that would be just one. Oh, no!
Margie, what's the matter? What's wrong?
Oh, no. No. Not tonight.
Margie, you look so funny. You're not going to faint, are you?
That's a very good idea.
Margie!
Well, Joyce, that was the last time I ever wore bloomers. I was about to throw them away a few years ago, but your father insisted I keep them.
Oh, Mother, to think that it happened again at the prom. How perfectly ghastly it must have been for you.
Oh, it was, darling. Ghastly.
But what happened? Who finally got to take you home? Grandpa or who?
Why, your father, of course.
Hey, where is everybody?
We're up here, Daddy, in the attic.
Hello, funny face.
Hello, Daddy.
Hello, sweet. Well, what have you two been doing up here,
Oh, we've had more fun, Daddy. Mother's been telling me all about the beau she had when she went to Central High School.
Oh, she has, has she?
Look at this snapshot of Johnny Green. Mm. Oh, he sounds simply terrific. Do you remember him?
Yes, dear. He was a drip. A drip of the first water.
Ralph, dear, and that doesn't sound so well coming from the principal of Central High School.
You heard me. I said drip, darling.
But where is he now? What does he do?
He's a plumber. He lives over in Glenley, I think. He works for a fellow named Roy Hornsdale.
You don't say. Oh, look, Daddy, all these old phonograph records. Listen to this one. How about it, Daddy? Can you jive?
Well, I can't exactly say I'm good at it, but I'd sure like to try.
Here we go.
Hey, take it easy.
Where's Papa, darling? Didn't he come home with you?
No, he was detained. The ambassador will be home for dinner, though.
Ambassador? You mean he got it?
Take a look at the evening paper. I put it right there in the trunk.
Angus McDuff appointed new ambassador to Nicaragua. Well, I'll be darned.
And so ends the story of Margie. And for their excellent performances, our thanks to Gene Crane and Glenn Langan, who returned to the footlights for a bow. Gene, since your last appearance on this stage, your chief production has been Young Paul Jr. All our heartiest congratulations.
Oh, thanks, Mr. Keeley.
Is it your first baby, Gene?
Oh, yes, of course. Why?
Well, the things the way they are now, it's a wonder you can get a new one without turning in the old one.
I suppose that young man keeps you pretty busy, Gene.
Oh, I should say he does. With bottles to sterilize and formulas to mix, I never get a chance to do much else.
Oh, Jeannie, it's a shame to blame that on the baby.
Oh, we're used to pinning things on the baby.
I can well imagine.
But seriously, it is. It's the first house of my own I've ever had, and I'm really crazy about it. It hasn't a single flaw.
No floor? What do you walk on?
Oh, Glenn. Well, it sounds as if Gene were walking on air these days. A new home, a new baby. Do you do your own housekeeping, Gene?
I do the cooking, Mr. Keeley. Come up sometime and I'll serve you both a meal.
Speaking of cooking, what are you serving up next week on Lux, Mr. Keeley?
Well, next Monday night we bring our audience a thrilling, romantic, and suspenseful drama. J. Arthur Rank's production, The Seventh Veil. And our stars are two great favorites of this theater, Joseph Cotten and Ida Lupino. The story of a talented and lovely woman in the shadow of a strange spell, The Seventh Veil is a tempestuous drama of love and emotion building to a startling climax.
Oh, that ought to make a great play for your listeners, Mr. Keeley. Good night.
Good night, and all our thanks for Marjorie. Lever Brothers Company, the makers of Lux Toilet Soap, join me in inviting you to be with us again next Monday evening when the Lux Radio Theater presents Joseph Cotten and Ida Lupino in The Seventh Veil. This is William Keeley saying goodnight to you from Hollywood.
Gene Crane and Glenn Langan appeared by arrangement with 20th Century Fox, producers of Nightmare Alley and Kiss of Death. Barbara Lawrence will soon be seen in the 20th Century Fox production, Captain from Castile. Heard in our cast tonight were Bill Johnstone as Macduff, Gil Stratton Jr. as Roy, and Clark Gordon, Francis Robinson, Mary Lou Harrington, Lillian Randolph, William Roy, and Julie Bennett. Our music was directed by Louis Silvers. This program is rebroadcast to our servicemen and women overseas through the worldwide facilities of the Armed Forces Radio Service. And this is your announcer, John Milton Kennedy, reminding you to join us again next Monday night to hear Seventh Veil with Joseph Cotten and Ida Lupino. Be sure to listen next Monday night to the Lux Radio Theater presentation of Seventh Veil with Joseph Cotten and Ida Lupino. Stay tuned for My Friend Irma, which follows immediately over most of these stations. This is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.
The 16th annual WHFR Record Show is Saturday, September 20th. If you're looking to sell records, cassettes, CDs, DVDs, VHS, or other music swag, WHFR is now accepting vendor applications. For dealer information, please visit our website, www.whfr.fm/recordshow. That's www.whfr.fm/recordshow. We look forward to working with you at the 16th Annual WHFR Record Show, Saturday, September 20th.
Broadcasting from the campus of Henry Ford College, this is WHFR Dearborn, listener-supported, non-commercial radio.
Once again, you are listening to Radio Vault on WHFR. We just heard from September 8, 1947, the Lux Radio Theater presentation of Margie with Gene Crane. And we've got one more hour before Brian comes in and does his thing in full swing. So let's get to it, shall we? Going back now to 1937, 10 years prior to what we just heard. It's another installment of Fibber McGee and Molly. So let us do it.
Broadcasting from the campus of Henry Ford College, this is WHFR Dearborn. Listener-supported, non-commercial radio.
When it comes to punctuality among faculty members. But our Miss Brooks, who teaches English at Madison High Summer School, has always believed that her principal, Osgood Conklin, is overly severe.
I could never understand why Mr. Conklin had such a passion for promptness until one day I learned that he was born at 5 o'clock in the morning and he's been early ever since. Anyway, by last Thursday, I was determined to get to school on time if I had to stay up all Wednesday night to do it. Promptly at 6:30 Thursday morning, my alarm clock went off. Having been up all Wednesday night, I ignored it. Then the phone rang in the hall, and knowing that my landlady, Mrs. Davis, was back in the kitchen, I sprang lightly out of bed and glided to the phone. Ouch! Hello?
Hello, Miss Brooks. This is Mr. Conklin. Are you up?
Sort of. What can I do for you, Mr. Conklin?
Two things, Miss Brooks. You can arrive at school promptly at 8 this morning, and once you get there, I want your promise that you'll concentrate on teaching English to your class instead of learning biology from Mr. Boynton.
Why, Mr. Conklin, one would think that Mr. Boynton and I...
Yes, wouldn't one? I think you should know, Miss Brooks, that the president of the Board of Education is back from his vacation.
Mr. Stone?
Yes, and he's already chewed me out... complained to me about the lack of in our summer sessions. Teachers taking time off for vacations, getting married, having children. Why, you teachers are acting more and more like
human beings.
Don't be egotistical. Now, I'm warning you, Miss Brooks, if you don't stop fraternizing during school hours, I don't see how I can remain the same considerate, even-tempered, kindly superior you've all grown to admire.
But, Mr. Conklin,
That's all for now. Just get on the ball, Miss Brooks. And when you get on it, see that you stay on it.
What does he think I am, a seal? Get on the ball. No fraternization. Yeah.
Good morning, Connie.
Oh, good morning, Mrs. Davis.
Who was that on the phone?
Mr. Conklin.
Oh, how is Osgood these days?
Horrible, thanks. He's getting more unreasonable every day. You have no idea how fed up I'm getting with his dictatorial nonsense.
You wouldn't have to take any of it, Connie, if you had some other job you could go to.
Some other job?
Yes. You weren't born a teacher, were you?
No, it just seems that way.
once secretary to a Mayor Norwich of Marks, Connecticut?
No, but I was secretary to Mayor Marks of Norwich, Connecticut. That's right nearby. Now, there was a swell boss.
Well, Connie, I've got a big surprise for you. You may be able to get your old job back just by calling him up.
What?
I just read where his present secretary won $49,000 in the 49er Gold Rush contest. That's the contest put on by,
some big soap company, wasn't it?
Yes, I think it was.
So much for living dangerously. Who won Colgate Palmolive Pete's contest?
Mrs. Ray. Mrs. Ray Thiel. She's the woman who's working for your old boss, Mayor Marks. With all that money, she'll probably quit her job at once.
Well, what has that got to do with me, Mrs. Davis?
Oh, don't you see, Connie? If you'll just give him a call, Mayor Marks may offer you the position again.
But I don't know if I want to go back to Connecticut, Mrs. Davis.
You don't have to accept the offer, Connie. But once he knows you can work elsewhere, Mr. Conklin's attitude will be entirely different. Now, go ahead, Connie. Call Mayor Marks immediately.
But...
You don't have to pay me for the call until next month.
Well, if that's the case, it will be nice to chat with His Honor again. I wonder if he'll remember me.
Go ahead, Connie. Lift the receiver.
All right, Mrs. Davis.
So I just told her right out. Bertha, I said if we weren't such old friends, I wouldn't open my yap like this. But even though I haven't seen you in years...
Excuse me. It's our party line. Well, Mrs. Davis, I'd feel a little silly if Mayor Marks didn't even know who I was.
But you said you got along fine with him, Connie. Now, don't be silly. You try again in a minute. I'll clear off the breakfast dishes.
Oh, that must be Walter Denton. He's giving me a lift to school.
Hiya, Miss Brooks.
Come in, Walter. As you can see, I'm not quite ready to leave the house.
Oh, that's all right, Miss Brooks. We got time. Besides, I know plenty of women who'd give anything to look as good wearing an expensive dress as you look in that beat-up, crummy old bathrobe.
Well, thank you, Walter, I think. Sit down for a minute, won't you? Here, read this Look magazine. I'm trying to place a long-distance call.
Long distance to who?
An ex-boss of mine. I'll tell you all about it after I talk to him.
So then I said, look, Bertha. Duncan Gainsborough just ain't your type of fellow. That's when she tried to stop me. Grace, she says to me, I've always been your friend.
Excuse me for interrupting, Grace.
That's all right, Bertha. I know this is your problem, but before you marry this man, you've got... Bertha, what are you doing on this line? I was talking to Elsie.
Sorry, I was trying to get Agnes. We've got the busiest party line in town. I guess I'd better get ready now, Walter. If you'll excuse me a minute,
Before you go, Miss Brooks, there's something I'd like to ask you.
Can't you wait and ask me in class, Walter?
Oh, no, ma'am. My question has nothing to do with English. The question is a man who, because his daughter happens to be in love with a certain other young fellow than who he might choose if he had the say-so over this girl, entitled to constantly kick this young fellow from pillar to post?
You're right, Walter. Your question has nothing to do with English. But I gather you're talking about your stormy romance with Harriet Conklin.
Exactly, Miss Brooks. You know how fond I am of Harriet, and because of this fondness, I've tried to be patient and understanding. But now I've come to a conclusion.
Yes?
Mr. Conklin has got to go. It isn't that I mind his treating me like dirt so much. It's a dirty way he does it. How do you combat a tyrant like that? Or how do you avoid him? Honestly, if I were 5 or 6 years older, I'd leave Madison High.
You may be 7 years older before you graduate, you know. But I know how you feel, Walter. I've been thinking of changing jobs myself.
Changing jobs? Well, what other kind of a job would you be good for?
What a nice way of calling me the ideal teacher. Before I'm led to the glue factory, Walter, I can go back to work as a secretary in Norwich, Connecticut. Mayor Marks can probably use me right now.
Gee, Norwich, Connecticut. Oh, but what about Mr. Boynton? You wouldn't want to leave him, would you?
I might not have to. As secretary to the mayor, I might be able to wangle a transfer for Mr. Boynton. He could teach there.
Oh, that's right. They do have biology in Connecticut, don't they?
In one form or another, they must. Now, you'd better get on to school without me this morning. I've got to try that call again.
Yeah, but you'll be late, Miss Brooks. What about Mr. Conklin?
Mr. Conklin will just have to wait. You know, I'm beginning to feel strangely liberated, and I like it. Connecticut is beautiful at this time of the year.
Gee, we're going to miss you, Miss Brooks.
I'll miss you, too, Walter.
Well, I guess I'll be going now. Be sure and write, won't you, Miss Brooks?
Of course I will.
Goodbye, Miss Brooks.
Bye, Walter. It'll be good to see Mayor Marks again. I wonder how he looks.
Well, Connie, did you place your call yet?
No, Mrs. Davis. The party line's been in use.
Well, you better get dressed and go to school now, Connie. I'll call the mayor for you and let you know what happened right after I talk to him.
All right, Mrs. Davis, but before I go, I'll try it once more.
So I says, Bertha, I says, well, you've been so busy in the office, how did you ever find time to have a baby?
Believe me, Grace, while you've been on the phone, Bertha couldn't have had triplets.
Starring Eve Arden will continue in just a moment, but first... Well, when Walter Denton left Miss Brooks, he was convinced that she had a job waiting for her in Norwich, Connecticut. Arriving at school, the first person he ran into was Harriet Conklin. After hearing the news, the first person she ran into was her father, Madison's beloved principal, Osgood Conklin.
So you see, Daddy, Miss Brooks is practically set in this new job.
But she can't leave now. Mr. Stone's back from his vacation. And only yesterday he was complaining about absenteeism. First our music teacher, Mrs. Jensen, trots off to visit her sick mother. Then Mr. LeBlanche needs an operation and fritters a week away in the hospital.
But that's not your fault, Daddy.
I'm afraid the head of the board doesn't agree with you, Harriet. You should have heard Mr. Stone yesterday. He actually threatened me.
What did he say, Daddy?
He said he'd have me pounding a beat in Brooklyn. If Miss Brooks leaves, he may even investigate some of the wild rumors flying around this school that I'm a
tyrant?
Thank you, my dear. If he decides to what do you mean, tyrant? I've always tempered my power with justice.
Look, Daddy, I know you mean well, but Miss Brooks is like a thoroughbred. Tense and high-strung. You've got to give her head sometimes.
I'd like to hand it to her on a plate sometimes. Don't you realize, Harriet, that you're asking me to be gentle with a woman who has single-handedly jacked up my blood pressure 25 points?
But don't you see, Daddy? If you don't want her to leave, you've just got to be nicer to Miss Brooks.
Well, I'll think it over. Now, you get to her first class and give the students something to study. Miss Brooks is late for a change.
I'll take care of it right away, Daddy. And when she does get here...
When she does get here, I'll tell...
Remember Mr. Stone and Brooklyn. Goodbye, Daddy. Well, hello, Miss Brooks.
Hello, Harriet.
Do you think you should whistle so loudly, Miss Brooks? We're right outside Daddy's office, you know.
Harriet, I've got a little message for you. Whistling in the hall is just the first of a long and distinguished line of violations I've got planned for today. This, in a word, is Independence Day for Constance Brooks.
Look, Miss Brooks, please don't do anything until you've talked to Daddy. He's waiting to see you.
Very well, dear. I'll toddle into his den for a moment.
Here I am, Miss Brooks, right over here. Oh, I came as fast as I could. I thought you were whistling for me. Now, about your being late today.
About my being late today, so what?
Nothing, my dear. I just wanted you to know that I consider it extremely admirable of you to get here this early. After all, you must have hurried your breakfast terribly.
Huh?
Your health comes first, you know. You mustn't let your sense of duty or your proven loyalty to me upset your peace of mind.
Am I in the right school? This is Madison High, isn't it?
Of course, my dear. And I am Madison's principal. Your principal, Miss Brooks, who prides himself above all things on his ability to ease the path for those members of his faculty, nay, his family, who are tired or run down. Deny this, Miss Brooks, but you need a respite from your school duties. You still have a zest for living, an enthusiasm for things outside your work. I know you have.
Oh, but I...
Why, many's the day I've watched you from my office as the final bell rang and you left your classroom. How I chuckled as you galloped through the halls toward some cheery rendezvous with Mr. Boynton. It did these old eyes good to see you hurling the pupils to right and left. What a sight it was. Their little heads bobbing like ping-pong balls as you flailed at them with your handbag.
Now, just a minute, Mr. Conklin.
I want to rekindle that enthusiasm, Miss Brooks. That's why I insist that you take the morning off.
Off?
I must be. I mean, run over to the gym, get yourself a bathing suit and take a nice sun bath. Then, when he's finished with his class, meet Mr. Boynton. Have a bit of lunch together, or go for a stroll around the campus. It'll do you a world of good. Well, what do you say?
I can only say what my dear old grandmother taught me to say at a time like this.
And what is that, Miss Brooks?
Never look a gift, Conklin, in the choppers. I'm off to the gym. Excuse me, Mr. Boynton, but now that you've dismissed your class, I thought I'd say hello.
Oh, hello, Miss Brooks. I was just... Gosh.
Why, Mr. Boynton, what are you blushing about?
You're in a bathing suit. I better turn around.
Oh, don't be so modest, Mr. Boynton. Turn around again and live a little. Been taking a sunbath outside the gym, Mr. Boynton.
Please, Miss Brooks, I consider sunbathing on school property highly irregular. Now, if I may change the subject...
Well, why change the subject? What's so terrible about my wearing a bathing suit? You'll just turn around, you'll see that this is a very modest little number, although it doesn't quite cover my knees.
Well, all right, but that looks stunning.
I borrowed it from the domestic science teacher. I'll bet this was a racy little job in the gay 90s.
I like old-fashioned bathing suits. Say, that one even has a bustle in the back, hasn't it?
No, and now you can change the subject. Or better yet, why don't you change into a bathing suit and we'll go halfies on the sun?
Well, I like the sun, Miss Brooks.
Oh, it's certainly done wonders for me. When I came to school this morning, I was fit to be tied. But now I love the whole world. Why, I even love Mr. Conklin.
You've been in the sun too long, Miss Brooks. That is, I'd like to join you, but you see, with two of our teachers temporarily out, Mr. Conklin's asked me to assume their duties in addition to my own.
But that isn't fair.
Oh, I'll be relieved pretty soon. It seems that one of our female teachers had some idea of working in Norwich, Connecticut, but Mr. Conklin's carrying on a campaign to keep her here.
A campaign?
Yes. It doesn't sound ethical to me, but he says that as soon as it's too late for her to get the job in Connecticut, he's going to work her like a horse. I wonder who the teacher is. Miss Brooks, what do you mean by that?
Just what I said. No wonder he was so sweet to me this morning. Take a sun bath, my dear. Run over to see Mr. Boynton. I'm glad I've got that other job waiting. Make a workhorse out of me, will he?
Well, Miss Brooks, where are you going?
I'm going to gallop over to Mr. Conklin's office and plow him under.
Hello, principal's office. Be brief, please.
Davis. Is Miss Brooks in her classroom?
No, Margaret, she isn't. I sent her out to take a little sunbath. Healthy teachers are happy teachers, I always say.
That's very considerate of you, Osgood. Would you give her a message for me when she comes in?
Of course. What is it?
Just tell her that I spoke with that party on the long-distance phone, and the whole thing is off.
That party? I'm afraid I don't understand.
I'm sorry, Osgood, but it's a highly confidential matter. After all, Miss Brooks wouldn't want everybody to know that the job she thought she could have had as Mayor Mark's secretary in Norwich is being kept by Mrs. Thiel. Oh, dear. Oh, dear, I'm afraid I've said too much.
Not too much, Margaret. Just enough. Goodbye, my dear.
But Osgood,
I said goodbye, landlady. So, there's no job in Norwich at all. Well, maybe now our little whistling tea kettle will shut her spout for a while. Now, Osgood, mustn't lose your temper. Remember the old blood pressure.
I've got something to say to you, Mr. Conklin.
Oh, you have? Have a seat, Miss Brooks.
Never mind the acting, Lionel. What I've got to say, I can say on my feet.
Good. I've got something to say to you, too. But, of course, ladies first.
I'm afraid I'm not really a lady, Mr. Conklin. If I was, those words couldn't have occurred to me as I approached this office.
Such as?
Slave driver.
Mm-hmm.
Bully.
Yes.
Ogre.
How about tyrant?
Oh, by all means, tyrant. Tyrant.
Does that complete the list, Miss Brooks?
Temporarily, yes.
Fine. Now you can listen to my message. Miss Brooks, although you consider me a tyrant, I think you should know that I am a very special kind of tyrant.
What do you mean?
I happen to be, Miss Brooks, the only tyrant you've got! Control yourself, Osgood. Watch that pressure, boy. You see, Miss Brooks, Mrs. Davis called while you were sunbathing on my time to inform you that there is no job open in Connecticut.
No job open, but...
However, since you seem so fond of secretarial work, you can take these reports home and type them neatly in triplicate. And one more thing, Miss High and Mighty. Don't you ever again dare to talk to me in the loud tone of voice you assumed this morning. Is that clear?
Yes, it is, Mr. Conklin.
Well, that's half of it.
I'm sorry you have all this extra work to do, Connie. I can't help feeling it's my fault.
Oh, it couldn't be helped, Mrs. Davis. I should have known Mrs. Thiel wouldn't give up her job just for a few measly $49,000.
Mayor March was very nice on the phone, Connie. He said that if any other desirable position came along, he'd let you know immediately.
Oh, I'm afraid he was just letting me down easy, Mrs. Davis.
Oh, gosh. I'm sleepy.
Why don't you take a little nap, Connie? It'll make you feel much better. Here, sit down in this rocker.
Thanks. This certainly feels good. You know, Mrs. Davis, sometimes I think I should never have left that job in Norwich. Why, I might have won that $49,000.
If I'd stayed there longer, I might have gotten into politics. Mayor Marks will have to retire someday, and who knows? I might even have become...
Your Honor, Mayor Brooks, I've got to talk to you at once.
Of course, Boynton. What is it?
As your personal bodyguard and constant companion, I insist that you hear this bulletin.
I'm listening, Boynton.
I love you, Your Honor. Love you madly, desperately, cruelly. Love you, do you hear?
Just through one ear. Better do a rebroadcast for the other one.
Oh, my darling, come out from behind that desk. You're so wonderful, so desirable. Come, let me hold you in my arms, Mayor dear.
Just call me May. It sounds more feminine.
Or perhaps you think me too bold. Maybe I should strive harder to control my passion. After all, yours is a position of trust. You're a high public official, the mayor of this city.
The mayor, yes, but I am also a woman.
And what a woman. Pardon me for baying at you, my sweet, but I just can't resist you. Put your arms around me, my darling.
But, Boynton, this is my office. Someone might see us.
Let them see us. I'd kiss you on the roof of the Chamber of Commerce, the steps of the City Hall, or right on Main Street.
Try my lips. There's less traffic there. thought I heard panting outside my door.
Oh, that. That's just Alderman Conklin. He's been waiting to see you for 8 days now.
Really? Well, take off his leash and bring him in.
Yes, Your Honor.
Hello, Your Honor. Your nice, nice honor. How is your sweet, kind, glorious mayorship this lovely afternoon?
Down, Conklin. What is it you want? Be brief.
I want to tell you something, I think you should know.
Yes?
There's been a mutiny. The people have rebelled against your tyranny, and in a free election, a free democratic election, I have just been elected governor of this state.
Governor? Oh, no. Oh, no, they can't elect him governor.
No, Connie, no. Wake up, Connie.
Huh? What? Oh. Oh, I'm so glad you woke me, Mrs. Davis. I was having a daymare about Mr. Conklin.
I'd better wake you, Connie. This wire just came for you.
Oh, let's see it. Well, it's from Mayor Mark's secretary. It says, Dear Miss Brooks, can offer you important position in local firm. This job pays double the salary you receive as a school teacher. Please answer by return wire, signed Mrs. Ray Thiel.
Why, Connie, that's wonderful. Are you going to accept it?
No, Mrs. Davis, I'll have to turn it down.
Turn it down? But what's wrong with the position they're offering? It pays double your salary as a school teacher.
That's what's wrong with it. I can't afford to work that cheap.
Lee Barton as our Miss Brooks returns in just a moment. But first, and now, once again, here is our Miss Brooks.
Well, my dream didn't come true, but Mrs. Ray Thiel's did. And if you want to know just how she felt, be sure and get the August 16th issue of Look magazine, which reaches the newsstands August 2nd. Congratulations, Mrs. Thiel. And I'd like Mayor Richard J. Marks of Norwich, Connecticut, to know that I consider him a swell ex-boss, and I'd enjoy meeting him sometime. Good night.
Miss Brooks, starring Eve Arden, is produced by Larry Burns, written and directed by Al Lewis, with music by Wilbur Hatch. Mr. Boynton is played by Jeff Chandler, Mr. Conklin by Gail Gordon. Others in tonight's cast were Jane Morgan, Dick Crenna, Gloria McMillan, and Gloria Blondell. Liberally sprinkled with laughs, listen to Mr. and Mrs. North Tuesday evening over most of these same stations. And be with us again next week at the same time for another comedy episode of Our Miss Brooks. Bob Lamond speaking. This is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.
And that show was from July 31st, 1949. Up next, Fibber McGee and Molly from 1937.
The Johnson Wax Program, presenting Marion and Jim Jordan as Fibber McGee and Molly. Ted Weems and his orchestra open the show with Goona Goo.
we give you two souls with but a single thought, Fibber McGee and Molly.
Where did you get that stuff? Two thoughts with but a single soul. What you got there, Molly?
Oh, it's a note from our sponsor.
Let's see it. What day is this? Let's see, Monday. What are you doing a week from Thursday, Molly?
Why?
We gotta take a trip.
Where?
Well, look what it says on this envelope. After 10 days, return to S.C. Johnson & Son, Racine, Wisconsin.
Oh.
Wonder what they want us for.
Why, that's silly, McGee. We couldn't both get into that little envelope.
Well, if we do, I want to sit by the window. Go on, open it up.
Well, listen.
Mm-hmm.
It says, Dear Fibber and Molly.
Oh, that's a nice letter, ain't it?
Quiet.
Mm-hmm.
Shall I read it?
Yeah.
Dear Fibber and Molly,
mm-hmm.
I see where Jack Benny is tops in the last radio poll. What has he got that you haven't got?
That's funny. I was asking myself the same question.
Well, what was your answer?
I'm still working on it. Now, read the rest of the note.
Well, he goes on to say, maybe you ought to put in more comical jokes.
Yeah, that's an idea.
Or on the other hand, how about doing a cereal like Benny does?
Cereal? I thought he was doing a dessert.
Excuse me, folks, but I'll have to remind you that this is the Johnson Wax Program.
Aha! That's what we got that Benny hasn't got. Johnson's Wax.
Thanks, Mr. Wilcox. We'll try and remember.
Yeah,
I think the sponsor will appreciate it.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, by the way, you know, I was just thinking.
Well, don't tell us. Tell your doctor. That's a symptom of something.
No, seriously. I was talking to the sponsor about the show, and I made a suggestion that he thought was great.
Did he say so?
No, but I could tell by the way he groaned that it hit him pretty hard. The thought just happened to come to me.
Well, I suppose even the thought has to go slumming now and then.
What was this idea, Mr. Wilcox?
Well, simply that sometime during the show, Fibber turns to me and says, now I think Mr. Wilcox has something to say.
Oh, well, that's a novel idea, all right. I never thought you had anything to say. Well, we'll try it sometime, though.
Thanks. You might just as well do what the other programs are doing.
Oh, yeah, but you know how it is with them other programs. Now, you take Eddie Cantor, for instance.
Oh, Eddie Cantor. Well, he's got something you haven't got.
Yes, and I know what it is.
What is it?
Jimmy Wallington.
Oh.
There, Elmo.
Hello, Mr. Tanner.
Listen, Fibber and Molly,
mm-hmm.
Can either of you tap dance?
Well, no. Why?
Oh, I heard Fred Astaire the other night, and he was swell.
Mm-hmm.
And I just got to thinking, if Fibber learned to dance like that, it would make a nice spot on the program. Mm-hmm.
If he ever tried it, it'd make a nice spot on the floor.
I suppose you spoke to the sponsor.
Yeah, and he was tickled to death.
Mm-hmm.
He said it might take you a week or so to learn to dance like that, but it was worth it.
Well, listen here, Tanner. If you think for a minute that we're going to...
Oh, don't thank me, Fibber. If I happen to get the good ideas first, you're welcome to them.
Oh, is your network red?
Oh, hello, Ted.
Say, Fibber.
I suppose you think we ought to write poetry like Gracie Allen.
What is it, Ted?
Well, I was talking to a friend of mine this morning, and he said he thought you had an audience as big as one man's family.
That's right.
I told him he was wrong.
Huh?
I know at least two men's families that listen.
Oh.
Theodore.
Yes.
What's your next number?
Well, Perry Como was going to sing Trust in Me. Why?
Well, I was talking to the sponsor, and he said you had a good little band, all right, but he'd like to have you play more like that other guy.
What guy?
Guy Lombardo. He said there's
all right, boy.
Invitation. Come to me without more speculation. Have no fear. the faith I have in you. Love will see us through. Only you trust in me. Come to me when things go wrong. Cling to me and I'll be strong. We can get along as long as you trust in me. While there's a moon on high, while there's a bird to fly, while there's a you and I, you can be sure that I love you. Stand beside me all the while. Face the future with a smile. Trust in me, and I'll be worthy of you.
Well, Fibber is looking a bit run down these days, so Molly is taking him to a gymnasium for a little build-up. Here they are, just entering the gym.
I don't see the use in this, Molly. Shucks, it's just another muscle and grunt joint. All they do is give you a bigger appetite so you eat more food, so you put on more weight so they get more business.
Well, I talked to the trainer on the phone, McGee, and he said, certainly, bring him in and we'll make a man of him.
Well, that's all for... Hey, what does he mean, make a man of me?
Now, be quiet. Here we are.
What's that smell?
Rubbing alcohol.
I knew it was alcohol. So strong, I thought they had parallel bars in here. What's this guy's name?
Trainer. Mr. Bouncewell Trainer.
Well, all I gotta say is he better not get too bouncy with me or I'll pop him.
Hello there, folks.
Oh, hi, bud.
How do you do, I'm sure. I just came in with...
Yeah, I can see you didn't come in for any training yourself, lady. Lovely complexion. Eyes sparkling.
Oh.
Splendid figure. Oh. Vigorous hair. Magnetic personality.
Oh, now, please.
But I must say, your grandfather here is in terrible shape.
Why, that's me husband.
Hey, what's the idea?
Look at that shape. He needs some weight off there.
Well, what am I supposed to be, a landscape?
He needs some off there, some off there, some on here, and a lot off down there.
Yeah. Well, we're both a little off up here. We wouldn't have come in this joint in the first place.
Oh, that's all right, lady. He was just joking. Now, as for yourself, madam.
No. Well, I'm not here for me. I'm here for him.
Yeah, she's here for me. I mean, I'm for her. That is, we're both here to
see... Oh, listen.
Shh.
70 days, raining outside, and it was so nice when we came in.
Well, that's not rain. That's a fat customer I was just working on. He's perspiring.
What's his mean annual fall, bud? 14 foot?
Well, we're ready to start anytime, aren't we, McGee?
Oh, I don't believe
Why, it. Certainly he is. Look at that figure he's got.
Well, what's the matter with it? Well, I'll admit I ain't no Gypsy Rose Lee or nothing.
Why, listen to your jerky breathing. Look at that spare tire around your middle.
Oh, that's all right. He had a good year.
And those pop bottle shoulders. And your hips are twice as wide as your shoulders.
Well, I don't sit on my shoulders, bud.
Baggage, man. Two trunks, Doc. Sign right here.
Huh?
Thanks.
I wonder what these are for. I'm not going anywhere.
Well, open them up and see. Why, there's a woman in there.
Hello there, Skippy. Well, it's about time you opened these up.
Hey, Grandma, what are you doing in there?
Well, here told me to come back in a pair of trunks, so I... Hey!
I'll have him call for these later. Now then, my boy, I think I can do something for you.
So do I. Just forget the whole idea.
Now, you've got to get in shape.
Yeah, get in shape. Take off your shirt. Here I will.
Hey, what's the idea?
Heavenly days, there goes all the buttons.
That's all right, lady. When I get through with him, he won't be able to wear that shirt anyway.
What are you doing now, bud?
Hold still. I just want to wrap this around your arm. Above the elbow. That's it.
Well, Well, what are you pumping him up for?
Yeah. You says the spare tire was around my middle, Bouncy.
All right, now quiet, please. You know, I heard you on the radio a lot. You really think you earn your money?
Well, no, but
McGee,
I don't think...
why do you say that? Does taking your blood pressure always act like that on you?
Blood pressure? Why, shucks, I thought this was a lie detector. Why, sure we earn our dough, Bouncy. We earn our dough. You betcha we earn our dough, Bud. Why, millions of people...
Pipe down. Let's hear your heart.
Oh.
Hey, this is terrible. It sounds like a trap drummer.
Hide that picture of Mae West and then try it.
Now, let me measure you. Will you write down these figures, Mrs. McGee?
Oh, certain.
Chest, 29.
Chest, 29. Well, you weren't measuring his neck, Mr.
Expand your chest, McGee. I said expand it.
Yes.
Okay, chest expanded 28 and a half.
Hey, that'd be right. It's more expanded than it is normal.
Well, I expand on the inside, Mom. I never was one to show off.
All right, now, the hips.
The what?
The hips.
The what?
The hip! Hip!
Hey!
Hips 43.
I got what they call an executive figure. Can't measure the muscles in the brain. Matter of fact, I've been requested to leave my brain to the Smithsonian Institute.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's a nice place to leave it, but why didn't you wait till you died?
All right, now the lower hips, please. Ah, yes. Lower hips, 45.
45. That's about his caliber.
All right, that's all, McGee. I think we can make a different man out of you in just a few months. Now, I'll give you a few breathing exercises.
Go on, I know how to breathe. I've been doing it for years.
He breathes best at night, Mr. Trainer.
Yeah.
Well, maybe not best, but loudest.
All right, now face me, McGee. Take a deep breath and hold it till I tell you to exhale.
You really think you can build him up, Mr. Trainer?
Oh, I'm sure of it. Of course, he's let himself go, but I think we can get him into good shape. Does he smoke much?
Oh, no. A couple of packages of cigarettes today and maybe a few cigars. The rest of the time, he smokes mostly a pipe.
He don't need a trainer. He needs a chimney sweep. What does he eat, lady?
Well, what have you got?
No, I mean rich foods, pastries, hot bread.
Yes, and mince pie besides.
A strict diet for him.
What kind of a diet?
Make him give up everything he likes and eat whatever he hates.
Oh, poor McGee. He's got... Heavenly days! Look at him! He's getting all purple.
No, I forgot! He's holding his breath! Exhale!
Don't exhale so hard, McGee. You sound like a storm at sea.
Well, why not? I'm an old ex-sailor.
Ted Weems plays the doll dance featuring the whistling of Elmo Tanner. Thank you.
athletic training is certainly coming along. Here he is rejoining Molly after a steam bath. Weak, but still game.
I've soaked up enough steam to run the Broadway Limited to Siberia and back. I'm practically parboiled. Hey, there, trainer. What's the idea of steaming me so long?
Oh, I just wanted to give you an idea of our facilities.
Oh, kind of a cook's tour, you might say. Well, he seems nice and tender now, Mr. Trainer.
Oh, he'll feel swell when he's had a little plunge in our pool.
Pool, eh? Hot dog, lead me to it. That's what I need, a little swim.
You better have a couple of more exercises first. How did you like our steam bath?
It's hot stuff, bud. But I'm willing to forget and forgive if I get a nice swim out of this.
You sure you can swim?
Can I swim? You hear that, Molly? Can I swim?
Well, can you?
Why, bud, why, I was the composer of that old swimming song. Can't you hear me calling Caroline? You get it, bud?
It ain't funny, McGee.
Okay. Why, bud, I was one of the world's greatest amateur swimmers, I was. Sardine McGee, they used to call me, down in the mud flats. Sardine McGee, the slinking sidearm submarine sensation and slick sea-going slitherer of the Sargasso Sea.
What gasso?
Sargasso.
Oh.
Just a couple of more things and you can have your rub and a swim. Now, let's try the rowing machine.
Okay, that's fine. That's familiar stuff to me. I used to stroke the crew at Princeton.
Oh, what were they, tomcats?
Ow!
All right, step right in it, McGee.
Okay.
Oh, excuse me, I forgot to tell you that seat slides.
Well, an old Princeton crewman should have known that.
Yeah. Well, okay. Well, let's see, where'll I row to, bud? Over to the desk and back or twice around the room?
Don't you be funny now. The machine don't move, you do.
Oh.
Use your skull, sculler.
All right. Now lean forward and row with a count.
Count who? Bring him in and we'll have a race.
I mean while I count the strokes.
Oh.
One. No. Get your back into it.
Pretend you're back at Princeton, McGee, trying hard to beat the Wellesley crew.
Why? Wellesley's a girls' college.
I know.
All right, now try it again. One. Two. Three. Four. We better let the rowing go. How about a rub?
It sure did, bud, right here. But all them rowing machines rub
McGee,
me at all.
Mr. Trainer means a rub down.
Oh, yes.
Oh, man, do I feel terrible. Oh, am I sore.
What's the matter with Scotty? Did he just get a rub down?
No, he just got his bill.
Hmm.
All right, right in there, Mr. McGee.
Okay.
Come on, put a rub down.
Okay.
Muscle off! Oh, muscle off!
What is wanting with muscle off?
Take this gentleman and give him a rub. Then show him where the shower is.
Sure, Tavarich. You come with me. I am give you a rub so hard I am hardly standing it.
Oh, no. Just take it easy, bud. You know I ain't.
All right, sit right down here, Mrs. McGee.
Oh, thank you. You know, I think this is going to do McGee a world of good.
Oh, I'm sure of it.
Listen.
Not so bad, eh, Tavarich?
Well, you play too rough, Vodka.
Sure, I am playing rough stuff. It is part of the game.
Oh, heavenly days, he won't hurt McGee, will he?
Oh, no, not a bit. Do him good. Loosen up those stiff muscles.
Yes, I suppose it will.
Ouch! That hurt. Lay down, Tavarich. Lay down.
Okay. Them hands of yours are too big for me. You've got me that time.
Sure, I'm gapping every time.
Oh, heavenly days, Mr. Trainer. I can't stand this. He's killing McGee. I'm going in there. McGee, what is he doing to you?
That ratted Vodka, you got the biggest hands. Oh, hello, Molly. Say, look how this guy plays pinochle. You want to take a hand?
Oh, pinochle.
Yeah, sure.
Playing cards.
Sure.
Well, and all the time I thought you were getting a rub down.
Well, don't think I ain't. I owe him 20 cents already.
I'll talk to you later, Musseloff. Go take your swim, McGee.
Okay, rough stuff. Come on, Molly. Where'd he say the pool was? Oh, hello there, sis.
Hi, mister.
What you doing down here among us athletes, sis? I says, is this any place for a little girl like you?
Like I what?
Like you are.
Like I are what?
Like? That better
I... Temper, McGee, temper.
Listen, little girl, do you belong here?
Sure I do, I betcha. My daddy is the trainer here.
Oh, well, what was it you wanted? I says, what did you want?
Well, my daddy told my mama he had an awful knobby customer here and I wanted to see him. He told my mama on the phone, you had limbs like an oak tree.
Aha. Sturdy, eh?
No, squirrely.
Well, is that all you came down here for, to see my knees? I says, what did you really want?
I just came down to bring my papa his pills, I betcha.
His pills?
Mm-hmm. My papa's always taking pills, I betcha.
Oh, the trainer, huh?
He says he feels terrible all the time. He can't sleep good or anything. Hey, Papa, here's your pills, Papa.
Well, for the love of Mike. Can you imagine that, Molly?
Oh, forget it, McGee. Yeah. Go take your swim. I want to go home.
Okay. Well, there's the pool in there. You hold the door open now, Molly, while I take a run and dive in.
All right, but don't splash around too long. It's late, you know, McGee.
Okay, hold the door wide now. Sardine McGee, they called me. How's the water look, Molly?
Oh, nice and clear, McGee. Go ahead.
The sensation of the Saragossa Sea in treatment.
Well, you look fine.
Mm-hmm.
I suppose you're limbered up, aren't you?
Yeah, you bet.
Can you bend over from the waist and touch your toes with your fingers?
Oh, you betcha. Watch this.
Oh! still a little stiff.
Who's a little stiff? Good night.
Good night, all.
All right, thank you, Harlow. That's going to wrap it for today's Radio Vault. The other side is waiting in the wings. Brian is here, and he'll have some more tunes that you come to know and expect here in 89.3. Have yourself a good one. We'll talk to you soon on WHFR Dearborn.